Hello, and welcome back to Not About the Weather. This is episode 32, and I am Brittany, joined tonight by, morning, day, whatever time of day you're listening to this, because we're all over the place, and I'm joined by Adriana and Natalie. So, hi, everybody. I'm really bad at hosting, apparently. Don't know how to do it.
Says who?
Says my brain as I was spitting all those words out, going, please just stop talking.
Nah, I mean, I think
it's charming.
The point is to make words come. That is why we are here, I believe. Maybe.
That's part of why we're here. We're also here just to talk about things that are going on either in our lives or in the media and pretty much anything that's not the weather, which is refreshing because I feel like that's all anyone talks about. That's what everybody talked about at work today, and I'm kind of sick of it. So,
There's so many times that you can say, it's getting real cold. Getting real hot.
It was horrible. At like 2 p.m. today, there was one of those like emergency weather alerts, so everybody's phone went off, and I literally said out loud, oh no, here we go, because everybody started panicking over nothing.
Wait, stop. What? Explain this situation to me.
Oh, so like, if you have a phone, yeah, and there's like an emergency,
cell phone.
And there's like a weather event happening, it will go off and be like, weather alert, like flash flood alert in effect for your area between blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And it's like this really obnoxious, like, wah, wah, wah sound. Unless your phone is on silent, then it doesn't go off. But, so we had one today because we had like a flash snow at 2 o'clock from like 2 to 3. It like snowed a lot and then did nothing. So there's like, they're just emergency alerts. They just happen.
And are they sent via the internet or like by cell service? Like there's something that has the access to send a message to every cell phone in the area.
Yeah.
I don't think that we have anything like this. If we do, I haven't noticed it. Like, you know, severe fire warning or whatever would be here. I mean, if any other Australians, like, know about this and I've just been totally oblivious, like, to a parent. But we certainly don't have that circumstance when you're describing where everyone's rushing around being like, did you get the alert? Something's happening. Never heard of what you're talking about. So that's quite incredible.
So that's the thing.
Do you get
happens
in California for fire and stuff, Ariana? Or
I've gotten a flash flood warning like once. Like we don't really have a lot of weird weather. I mean, we do, but not enough to warrant. We have, our weather bothers us because we are not equipped for it. Like our streets flood when it rains like 2 inches because it doesn't, we don't have any infrastructure set up.
Yes.
But so all our problems of our own making.
Okay.
Basically.
I understand.
Yeah, I mean, we don't get them, like, on the East Coast. They're definitely much more frequent, but we don't get them, like, all the time. So we'll get them when, like, as opposed to 2 inches of rain, like, when we're getting, like, 11 inches of rain. Like, we'll get ones where, you know, it depends on your area. Sometimes they're, like, area restricted. So, like, if there's, like, coastal flooding, like, the shoreline cell towers will get pinged for that. Or if it's, like, in New York City, then New York City will get pinged. But so we got one of those.
We've been talking about the weather for a really long time.
Let's move on.
So this is Not About the Weather, and if you like what you hear or want to hear more about the weather, because we usually talk about it at the top of every episode, you can find us on various platforms, iTunes, Spotify, You can get in touch with us on Twitter at NHW.
Yeah, we are.
That is so cool.
This is the first episode Ariana has been on for 2019. So welcome to 2019, Ariana. We are on Spotify. It's very fun. I'm very
excited. This is really exciting. I'm going to go look it up right now. So carry on. Cool. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. While Ariana's looking that up, you can go and look us up on Twitter at NATW Podcast. That's for Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can get in touch with us at Gmail. You can go to our website, notaboutheweatherpodcast.com, and you can follow us as a Tumblr account. Send us an ask. We love hearing your questions and comments and, you know, general well-being concerns for, you know, us in various parts of the world as we're affected by weather.
Yeah.
It's nice of you to reach out.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we usually do here after we're done talking about the weather is go into our hypes and gripes. So we discuss something that we're really excited about and want to share with the world, and something that is bothering us about the world. We try to keep it not about the big things that should be bothering us about the world, but the little nitpicky things that, you know, just really get under our skin. So this week I would like to actually start with hypes because I just feel like it. Mm-hmm. That's just the mood I'm in.
Okay. That's cool. I think that's cool.
That's so depressing, Brittany. Well, okay. But can we end on your gripe? Because I feel like yours is definitely the least depressing.
Yeah, and I feel like I could spin it into a hopeful message for tomorrow.
Well, I have a great story about yours, so.
Oh, okay, great.
But anyway.
We'll get to it. It'll keep the listeners.
Sorry, we're not very organized.
All right, so.
We can do anything. That's all good.
Sorry, I'm just having to, like, wrap my head around this now.
What, Spotify or, like, doing a hype for
everything,
Spotify?
Everything. We're on Spotify. How does that work? Is it, like, the music? Do we get 5 cents every time somebody listens to us?
I don't think we get 5 cents, unfortunately. I think it's the same as on iTunes, where we don't get 5 cents every time anyone listens to us on iTunes, unless we choose to ask people to pay.
We are so generous in providing this free content to everyone.
That if you listen to this in August, when we're recording it in January, the snow alert message means nothing to you.
Yeah.
We are very timely.
Well, we try to be, but, you know, it's a hard balance between picking something that's a current event right now and picking something that will sound completely irrelevant. Like, remember when we did that political focus podcast about the election when we were, like, very, very sure that Hillary was going to win the election?
Oh, but it's so depressing. Can we not talk about it?
Can we actually just, like, take that episode down?
That one was it's embarrassing and depressing, but anyway, we try to both be evergreen and current. Spotify is great. It looks really cool. We just pressed a button to say, is your show legitimate enough for Spotify? And they said, yes, it is. And so now it's there. It's really cool.
I wonder if they actually listen to it.
I have no idea.
I think we're legitimate enough, but I don't know if my opinion holds anything.
I know some slightly more legitimate, quote-unquote, or, like, podcasts hosted by other people or even, like, celebrity content that is not on Spotify, and I don't know if that's just because they haven't figured out how to do it or because we are more, like, better content for Spotify. I'm pretty sure that they could do it if they wanted to, so if you're a podcast creator, check out syncing to Spotify. That would be really cool, too. And it's so convenient because I hate having different apps. I try to have, like, a very minimal amount of apps on my phone, so having the content on Spotify as opposed to, like, having like, Podbean or something is really great for me.
Well, that's good. Yeah. Natalie, do you want to talk about how great something else is, namely Call the Midwife?
Oh, you'd like me to go first? I can go first. Okay. So my hype currently for this week and this time of year is a British BBC drama called Call the Midwife, and it is one of my favourite shows ever. Have either of you heard of or seen Call the Midwife?
I have heard of it, and I tried to watch the first episode because I heard it was like Downton Abbey. Mm-hmm. But it was not like Downton Abbey.
It's not like Downton Abbey. I will very much admit it's not like Downton Abbey. So I'll tell you a bit about Call the Midwife and why. Oh God, the first episode, that was with Jenny. That was a million years ago. Wow. So Call the Midwife is a British BBC drama. It is a period drama like Downton Abbey, but it's set a fair bit later. It's set in the 1950s and 1960s after World War II. In the East End of London, you know, in the post-Blitz environment, you know, a community that's still rebuilding from World War II bombings and stuff like that. It deals with the period of time when the NHS, like the National Health in London, was getting introduced, and so people's access to care was better, and a lot of the nurses, you know, that were working out in the community were bringing that healthcare to people who had no idea that they had the right to it for free and stuff, so that's kind of cool. It's definitely focusing on a group of midwives, like Nanatus House is a group of both civilian nurses and nun sisters who are trained as midwives and nurses. Not all the stories are about babies. A lot of baby stories, but lots of them are about like community healthcare, which is actually very interesting to me because my mother was a community nurse. Like, she would go out to people's houses on rounds, very similar to this. And yeah, it just basically follows this group of girls, some of whom are nuns, some of whom are civilians, and the care of their community in Poplar. And it is one of the most interesting shows to me that I've ever seen for a number of reasons. And it's funny you say that about the first episode because it began with the focus on a lead character, this woman called Jenny, who was a real person. The book is like based on her memoir. And I hated Jenny. She was the lead central character and I hated her. And so the first few seasons, I liked everyone except Jenny. And then Jenny left the show and now I love the show much more because there's no more Jenny. No offense, Jenny, wherever you are. But so she was a girl who had a very weird attitude, and I didn't care for her. But I loved lots of the characters, lots of interesting stories about their personal lives. Like one of them is a nun who ends up leaving the service, leaving the church, and ends up marrying the local doctor. One of the original civilians ends up becoming a nun. There's lots of stuff about faith. There's lots of stuff about like women's, it's like super feminist show, you know, female showrunner. And I believe that like out of every episode, and there've been like, I think we're in season 8 now and each season has about 10 episodes or so, plus a Christmas special. I think out of all of those episodes, there are maybe two of I guess 80 episodes where both the writer and the director of the episode was men. You know how it's very common for a television episode to be like it's pretty uncommon for an episode of TV to be both written and directed by women. On this show, there are maybe two or three episodes overall where it is a male writer and director team. Nearly every episode is either written or directed by a woman or both. And I just love it. It's such a slow burn show. Like the writing is so very, very, very slow in terms of personal character development, like seasons long payoff. Like there was a gay character, a nurse who was a lesbian, and the second she walked down and I'm like gay. That girl's a lesbian. And it was not in any stereotype way, just tiny little reactions, tiny little micro expressions or like a tiny little phrase or reaction something else have said that continued for like several seasons and very, very, very slowly revealed that this girl was gay and in a secret relationship with a nurse somewhere else. Same with another girl and alcoholism and same with like PTSD for one character. And it's just really slow and careful in the character work. And I love it. It airs on Sundays in the UK, so it comes to Australia. Well, we watch it on the BBC website, but I think it's on some local networks as well. On Monday nights, we're like, it's Midwife Mondays, and Leo and I watch the the nuns and nurses of Nanada's house. And I just love it. I just think it's such an interesting character show. I love all the characters. It's got very melodramatic, sad, horrible deaths, but it's also got a lot of social commentary about healthcare, you know, vaccines, you know, like all this kind of stuff. It's a really powerful show about different health and social issues and why this, I guess, why the services we have now, or at least that Britain has now, are so important and should be respected, which is interesting in the era of Brexit because, you know, there's definitely episodes that feel like quite challenging to the current political regime now because we're reflecting back on, like, what we overcome to get to this point. Like, and last week we just had a episode that dealt with, like, one of the suffragettes in... she was an old lady who had been one of the suffragettes for women's suffrage in the UK, like one of the people that survived the hunger strikes in jail. And it's just, I don't know, it's very educational and feminist and, you know, very sad but also very funny. And British drama is always, like, very low-key, like, it's very slow and patient, you know. Downton is a bit more heightened than something like Call the Midwife, and, you know, Call the Midwife isn't for everyone if you don't love medical shows and, you know, gross wounds and childbirth, a lot of childbirth. I don't really like children or want a baby, but I love this, I love this show, and it's very interesting. But yeah, I'm especially a fan of the post-Jenny era, and it's interesting that the show survived so well even when it was originally focused on a central character who then left. And yeah, all of your favorite Harry Potter ladies are in it. Like, I think that there was a lot of actors who were, like, you know, your standard British BBC cupboard of actors, and a lot of really cool people who were, yeah, in things that have crossed the pond as well. But I'm a big, big fan. And, yeah, it's got a huge viewership in England, actually, like probably like 11 million per episode or something in a country that's, you know, smaller than the USA. So it's really popular, but I don't know. It's just a funny, sad period drama, and it deals with every social issue in a huge period of social change. And, yeah, I like it a lot. I think it's accessible on Netflix some of the seasons, but big fan, and it airs at Christmas, and then it airs from, like, January to, you know, March or whatever for the short British season, like we were speaking about the other week, Brittany, where then for the rest of the year there's no television. But,
yeah,
I love it, and definitely... If there was, like, a community of people who were, like, making GIFs and memes about Call the Midwife in the way they do about the shows, I would definitely love to jump in with that because it is a huge touchstone in my life, especially at this period of the year. But, yeah.
Is there, like, a famous image of it or, like, images of it where... Do they ride bikes?
Yes, that's
all I can picture whenever I hear Call the Midwife. If I'm like, I think they ride bikes.
That's correct. They ride bikes. And they were... so that was, like, it was, like, a local area, you know, and they do their rounds on bicycle. That's correct. And yeah, it's cool. I like... Yep, the lady on the bike with the little cardigan... I especially love the nun stories. Like, there's a lot of interesting stories about the church and, like, nuns versus healthcare, you know, like in contraception and abortion and stuff. And, like, that's a really interesting factor of it. One time one of the nuns died and it was very sad. And recently my favourite character of the civilian nurses died and that was also very sad. But I still love it and it's great. And the lady who was the lesbian, for anyone who watches The Crown, is that what it's called? The Crown? The British? Mm-hmm. She's going to be in the next season of The Crown as Camilla Parker Bowles, and that's why she's not on Call the Midwife anymore. But she did not die. They did not kill the lesbian, so that was good too.
You just reminded me, Natalie, that in, like, a weird coincidence, my grandma was a nurse in, like, with when she lived with nuns in the 50s also.
Yeah, that's exactly that kind of era. Like, it was really interesting that there were particular orders of nuns who were dedicated to nursing and women's health. And this is very much that. It's like a community of, you know, half nun, half civilian nurses who live in a... it's not like a nunnery. It's like a clinic, you know. It's a local nun house for the healthcare. And then it's really interesting that aspect of it. And it's cool. Very complex, long game writing, and I appreciate their patience with it and the dedication to female creators and camera people and directors and writers and stuff. It's a very, very lady-centric show for anyone who's craving, like, that kind of thing in their life. So, yeah. Pretty graphic about babies, and definitely lots of dead babies. Not lots, but, like, there's, you know, cases. It's a, you know, there's usually a case of the week or a couple of cases of the week. And they can sometimes be pretty harsh. But it's very educational in, like, all of the things that life, you know, like, healthcare and society overcame, you know, like homosexuality being illegal, like, you know, transportation of children to Australia as part of the home children, like adopting out poor children and then them ending up being like abused in workhouses. It had, did you guys know in America anything about the scare with a drug called thalidomide? Is that something that either of you guys are aware of? It might have only been a British thing, but it was a drug that was given to women for like pain in childbirth, not childbirth, but like a morning sickness drug in the 50s, and it worked really well. And then a few years later, like, those people all started having birth defects in their pregnancies, and it was like a cause and effect thing where the drug was originally, like, approved as a treatment, but then caused bigger problems, and, like, the way that the doctors had to deal with that consequence. And it's just really interesting to me and very invested. But, yeah, it's midwife season, so I'm very excited. And if I think that it's something that maybe not too many Americans know about. So if you like British drama and women, women-led shows, this is a good one. It's not like Downton Abbey, though. The tone is nothing like Downton Abbey. Downton Abbey feels a very different niche in my heart for the kind of entertainment I like.
It's on PBS. If you live in the US, then you can watch all the seasons for free on the PBS app.
Oh, cool. Oh. Is it? Oh, for yes. Call the Midwife? That's awesome. Yeah, I guess that makes sense because it's also like BBC production, so it's that public corporation broadcasting. Another thing with the BBC, and I don't know if this is the same with PBS, is that they have, like, quotas to fill of, like, the kind of programming that they have to make for, like, diversity and, like, you know, different subcultures, different languages, different topics. As a public broadcaster, they have, like, certain goals and requirements that mean that they are aiming to create like a wide range of programming in a way that maybe like commercial networks don't. And so I really like that, but it makes sense they have a deal with the PBS, which is a similar kind of network in America, I believe. Is it a public one, right? That's what the P stands for.
It is, but I don't know if they have quotas. Judging by the fact that they only show Call the Midwife, Downton Abbey and Sherlock, I think they have a quota of how many BBC shows they have to show.
Probably.
But I don't know about anything to do with, like, a diversity quota. It's also, like, very individual market-driven, because I know, like, every time I go on PBS, I have to, like, choose my market. Like, PBS, like,
what?
I am either in the Philadelphia when I'm at my apartment, or if I'm like at my parents' house, then I'm in like the New York market, so I have to like pick which PBS I'm looking at.
Sure.
I'm not really sure though, but that's something to look into.
Anyway,
I actually don't know how PBS works.
Well, it seems nice. Hopefully people enjoy Call the Midwife. If they are looking for a dramatic lady show set in the 50s London. There's a lot of nice clothes as well and a lot of interesting things. So it's really, really cool. That is my hype. It is the season of midwife. It is Midwife Mondays.
Midwife Mondays. Yeah. Nice alliteration. I like it. So, Adiana, talk to me about Smallville, because I've never seen Smallville. I feel like I would love Smallville. And is it at all related to Rosewell? I don't think it is.
I'm actually... Is it okay? Can I talk about R. Kelly first? Because I just finished watching it. And also, it's really terrible, so I don't want to act on it.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, so let's switch to gripes in the middle of the episode.
We can literally...
Why don't we do, like, one each?
Yeah, I think so. Let's go. We can go one hype, one gripe, one hype, one gripe. That's fine. A new horizon. That's totally good.
I'm sorry. I just didn't know that we were going to do it this order, or else I wouldn't have picked these two things.
Talk about whatever you want. You can talk about nothing that's on this document.
I actually like that idea as well. Like, I actually think that, like, maybe we should always do one hype, one gripe. So, yeah, carry on. Just whatever you want.
Okay. Well, my gripe is R. Kelly, because I've been watching Surviving R. Kelly. Did anybody watch it?
I refuse to watch it.
Well, he sucks a lot. He's a terrible person. it's just, like, it's really astounding to watch, because I didn't know very much about R. Kelly at all, since I was really young when a lot of these things happened. Mm-hmm. But when you're watching it in the documentary, like, these things are so outrageous. You're like, how can anybody, like, how can any adult human
get away with this?
Be like, oh, that's fine. Like, at first, you guys, he married Aaliyah when she was 15. Yeah. She was 15.
Yeah.
And he married her. And everyone was just like, how eccentric. It's just like, it's so astounding.
I know what you mean. I do see that kind of thing happen. And with him, I have a vague memory of it being like, just like a joke. Like, they're like, lol. You know, trapped in the closet, lol, you know, like, yeah, kind of thing. And it's like, it is. And I feel like that has been a problem with not just R. Kelly, but many issues, that people are like, lol, a hilarious rumor. Oh, isn't that weird? And then that later it's been like, wow, that was a weird thing to just be like, yeah, that's just what happens. Like, you know, like.
That wasn't even like. The Aaliyah thing is so terrible, but in some ways I can understand people dismissing it because she was famous too, and the way that we project sexuality on young female artists is so twisted and messed up, like the way that, you know, they had the countdown for Britney Spears for turning 18, and the way that everyone was like tearing down Miley Cyrus when she's like 13.
Yeah.
It's so disgusting. But like, we don't fully think of them as real people.
Mm-hmm.
But then like in like 2004, he has a sex tape come out with a 14-year-old. And just like some.
What? How is that? Like, how? I've never heard of that. Really?
Yes. He was in court for years. He was tried for child pornography distribution. It's just like mind-boggling. At the same time that this was happening, this happened the same time that he released Ignition. This was before Trapped in the Closet.
That is incredible to me. Like, that is just, yeah, I know what you're saying. It is incredible. It is beyond concept that we're just like, yeah, that happened, I guess, that it's not like an instant blacklist forever, you know, like, it's really very bizarre.
It is. It's just so weird the things we're willing to dismiss. And, like, I was just having this conversation with my friends on Sunday,
mm-hmm.
because we were talking about, I think, Scientology.
Yeah.
And Tom Cruise. Yeah. And I was saying, like, we need to stop supporting Tom Cruise because he's, like, the leader of this cult that's destroying people's lives. And my friend was like, well, what are we supposed to do? Stop watching Mission Impossible movies? We can't do that.
Yes, you can.
And I was like, yes, we have to. And then she was like, well, does that mean that you're going to not watch the Veronica Mars show because of Logan Eccles? And I was like, oh, you're right.
Is he a Scientologist?
Logan Eccles, his father, is a very high-up Scientologist, and he's a Scientologist, too. So he's definitely complicit in these people who are, like, kidnapping children.
Yeah, and I think we talked about this before, haven't we? Where it's like, where, like, what do we do? Like, what do you do? I mean, it's easy to not listen to R. Kelly and not support him. But, like, sometimes, like, with Scientology, for example, like, that runs so deep in, like, other things. Like, it's so...
Like, what...
I don't know.
What, yeah, what can... Not saying that people aren't willing to do something, because I think a lot of people are willing to do what they can. I think it's more that people don't know what to do. Like, they don't know what cause and effect will elicit change, if you know what I mean.
I personally, I think people are, like, unwilling to do something because mm-hmm. they don't want to lose their art. Like, for example, like, I was being all holier than thou. I was saying, like, you know, we can't hire Tom Cruise. We can't hire Elizabeth Moss.
Is she a Scientologist?
She's a Scientologist. So one of my friends was being like, no, I have to watch Tom Cruise movies. And the other friend was like, no, but I love Elizabeth Moss. And I was being very like, oh, you guys are awful and very holier than thou, until they were like, well, do you not want Logan Eccles in the new Veronica Mars show? And I was like, no, of course he has to be in it. He has to. So clearly I am a hypocrite too. So, I mean, I think it's us. We need to be willing to be like, nobody is irreplaceable, mm-hmm. I think is fundamentally true. Like, if we were all good people, there is nobody who is so talented that they're allowed to be awful because they're irreplaceable. Nobody. So we just have to be willing to, like, give up Logan Eccles.
Well, it's interesting because, how do people, I mean, Scientology is just like one of a million examples of, like, hard lines being drawn. How does the consumer affect that? Like, how does the consumer, like, I agree, like, I don't like the attitude at all of people being like, well, I just want to enjoy this and not think about why it's problematic. I both get it and I don't like it. Totally understand, but also do not like the attitude. But what can actually be done? Like, yes, us saying that we're not going to watch Tom Cruise is great. What do you think would actually elicit, like, a change? Like, as in, like, not getting him hired? Like, who would have to say no to him?
Well, the people in power have to say no. Like, for example, Tom Cruise, I think, is a lost cause. He's clearly, like, he's very complicit in the terrible things that Scientology does. But someone like Elizabeth Moss, I genuinely think she's like a Leah Remini, where she just, like, has no idea that they're kidnapping children. Like, she just doesn't know. She's just like, oh, whatever. And she pays her millions of dollars in dues and, like, goes about her life. For someone like her is savable. And so what the people in power need to do is, like, just stop. Like, if you know they're part of this, you just, the reason this came up on Sunday is because my friend is the assistant to someone who wanted to hire Michael Pena to be in their TV show, and she was, like, really going after him.
Yeah.
And Michael Pena is a Scientologist. And I was like, you can't hire him. He's a Scientologist. And she was like, oh, but he's so good. And I was like, he's not good enough. Like, this isn't, like, there's so many other options. Just pick another option.
Mm-hmm.
No good is going to come from this. At best, you're giving Scientology more money because he has to give a percentage of all of his money to Scientology. So you're literally paying into Scientology.
Ugh.
At worst, he converts a couple of PAs, you know? Like, So don't do this. But so the people in power just have to be willing to be like, you know, I'm not gonna, if they stop getting hired, then someone like Michael Pena or like Elizabeth Moss is going to be like rethinking their life. Like, is this actually moving me forward in life? But also, like, we need to stop supporting Tom Cruise.
I agree.
And stop listening to R. Kelly's music. I know Ignition is fun, but it's not.
And that's, I'll tell you one of the worst things about, not the worst things about that, but, like, Ignition is one of the most triggering songs that get stuck in my head. Like, it's, if I so happen to hear it, delightful. I will be singing it for weeks, and then I'll be like, no, I'll have to be like, I can't let anyone hear me sing Ignition because R. Kelly is evil, and I'm fully aware of that, but unfortunately the song Ignition is one of my most offensive earworms that as soon as I hear it, it will be in my head for about literally.
Do you remember when they did it on Glee and it was so good?
Yes, I do. But, oh God, what a time. And it's just, I mean, I don't have any kind of education to speak about, like, how that train of, like, stopping supporting people, like, what it takes to get to the top. But all you can do is choose to, you know, diverge from it, like, to choose to not be involved with it yourself. And hopefully others will choose not be involved in it themselves. But how do we get the people in power to stop that, you know? Like, how do we, like, is it, you know, enough individuals taking away their custom to be like, you will, like, we couldn't even get Johnny Depp fired from Fantastic Beasts
to
beat his wife. Like, you know, like, even though, like, hang on. Oh, yeah, sorry, my headphone cable just pulled out because I was too angry about Johnny Depp. Yeah, like, even though I'm sure Fantastic Beasts lost probably millions of viewers because of that, I am one of the millions. I've not seen Fantastic Beasts 2. And I'm sure that it lost many, many millions, and it was not received well regardless. But, like, what kind of,
I mean, I think that's a start.
What kind of resistance will actually, like, because even when it doesn't make logical sense, like, it made logical sense for them to, like, keep Colin Farrell and not use Johnny Depp in Fantastic Beasts.
And, like, it's a magic movie. It's literally the easiest thing they could have explained away.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, you know, he was on the run. He could have many disguises, you know? Like, it doesn't make any sense. You know, hire Ewan McGregor so that him and Jude Law can finally kiss.
Oh,
you know,
it's God. Like, don't even bring that into my life.
don't even worry about it. Like, it's fine, you know? But it's just, that was seemed even like a matter of ego, like as in, like, you don't tell us we can't use our good friend Johnny Depp. You know, it wasn't even though they probably knew they were going to lose money, or maybe they didn't believe it until it happened. Like, maybe they really didn't believe the backlash until it happened, but I don't know. I'm very happy to stop consuming things on ethical grounds, and, like, I've said, I, you know, I try not to tell people, you know, that, you know, not to like something or, you know, harsh their buzz unless it's about something ethical like this, you know, like, unless it's like, I can't support that because, you know, of a moral reason, not just like, 'cause I didn't like it. I'm sure there's lots of things that I love that have moral problems that I'm not even aware of.
So many.
Like, nothing is pure, but there are some real obvious ones where, like R. Kelly, you know, like the proof about Scientology, where we have the facts and we've just, like, chosen to go blind about it because, I don't know, I guess it feels like it's someone else's problem or, like, not an achievable change. Like, at some point in the 90s, someone was like, yeah, this is allowed, you know, like, rappers just, they do crazy shit, you know, that's part of their crazy. Yay, R. Kelly, it's fine, trapped in the closet. So, like, I don't know. It's just so bizarre. And I don't, like, the thing about, and the fact that, again, it's played off as a joke. Like, my biggest memory, not biggest memory, but my memory, I remember, like, an Aziz Ansari bit that I guess was on, like, a talk show or something, and he was telling a story about R. Kelly, and, you know, it was passed off as a joke. Like, it was pretty horrific. Like, it was like, you know, he was saying, you know, so they had, he was describing this part where R. Kelly was on a show and doing an interview or something, and he, they did an interview with him, and they, the first, you know, first question, the guy was like, now, Robert, are you attracted to teenage girls? And Aziz was like, you know, all he had to do was say no. You just say no. You just say no. It's all you got to do. You just say no. But that's not what R. Kelly does. R. Kelly goes, define teenage.
Oh, my literally God.
Literally the worst answer. And Aziz Ansari's had his own stuff as well. But this piece of, you know, story that he was telling about R. Kelly was both highlighting how horrific it was, but still played off as, like, a joke, like a comedy bit. Like, it was very, like, odd that, like, yes, we are hearing about and knowing about these horrors, but people just seem to cope with it by passing it off. Like, and it might be that the people's brains just aren't equipped to tackle it. Like, that the ideas, that the horrors of the world are too big for them to make real in their mind or something. That might be a bigger problem, because there is definitely an onset of PTSD in the world from the fact that our human monkey flesh brains are not developed enough to handle the amount of trauma that we now have access to via the internet. Like, we've developed technology and access faster than our brains have been able to process input. And so there's a lot of, you know, worldwide stress and PTSD genuinely, because we are now aware of things that we were never meant to be aware of. Like, we were never meant to tackle the world's problems one by one. But the fact is that we have to, whether it's, like, you know, refugee crisis or, you know, abusive behavior and all of this insane stuff. I just don't know. I just don't know what to do. Like, I'm certainly not being like, oh, I just want to like the stuff I'm allowed to like. That's not my angle at all. It's what do we do?
I don't know.
To help.
We make documentaries that then go and capture the attention of Twitter. But I also think that too is like a bubble. So it's like, yeah, this documentary was made and I feel like I'm caught up because I read about it on Twitter when everybody was watching it live. And yet, like, if you ask, like, Joe Schmo in my office, like, I like to use my office as, like, I know this is horrible, but, like, kind of like a test pool. Like, I listen to, like, what they're watching, like, you know, as I'm at my desk, like, what is the general, I feel like they're like a good general population, because they're a group of people who they're not on Twitter like all day,
they
every
have,
day.
Like, normal access to news.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
So like things like sometimes it's actually kind of funny. Like I'll read something on Twitter or like, cause I'll have TweetDeck up or something. And then like, I kind of like mark down a timestamp and then wait a couple hours. And then they're like, oh, did you hear? And I'm like, oh, okay, they're getting there. So, but like, I listen to, like, what watching and stuff, because, like, I guarantee you no one in that, like, little bubble of where I sit has seen this R. Kelly thing. Like, it wasn't a thing that captured their attention. And, like, I feel like they're all talking about things that other people aren't watching, or it's just – it's really interesting. So, like, yeah, things – and I think this is also kind of, like, circles back to – we were talking about before we got into hypes and gripes about, like, you know, just the, like, general state of things. Like, yes, there are so many people of, like, what you're immersed in and what you're angry about and what you think is going to happen. And, like, you know, you're like, everybody's talking about how
such and such a thing is going to happen. I'm trying not to reference the election because it still hurts. But, like, everybody's like, yes, Hillary's going to win. Like, there's no doubt about it. But, yeah, we were in a bubble. Like, we weren't in middle America where that was not the case. So, like, I hate saying middle America because there's so many good people in middle America. But, like,
also, that, this election was stolen. So, well, and also the Electoral College doesn't work. It was made to appease slave states. But okay, aside from all that.
That's a topic for another day. But I think, like, just this getting, like, I don't know. Yes. All right. Now my point is undervalued a little. But that's okay. So it's – but, like, you pay attention to the conversations that you're involved in with the people you follow and the whatever you get caught up in. And then you're angry about it. And then you're like, well, why isn't it happening? And it's like, oh, because the person who's going home and watching – like, you know, Grey's Anatomy or whatever they watch weekly for the last 11 years and refuse to change and take in any new information, that's what they're going to do, no matter what's going on with it.
I definitely understand. Yes, that is true. But, like, in terms of Natalie's, like, what can the average person do? I think us who are informed, what we can do is to make ourselves more informed and be willing to talk about these things, not, like, in an aggressive way, but just, like, in a casual way. Like, for example, well, we might have to take this out, depending on how it goes, but were you guys aware that a certain popular actor in fandom is, like, a horrific wife beater? Probably not.
What? No.
Probably not. I just found out on Sunday, because my friend is an assistant to this famous writer who was best friends with his wife, and so when he beat her really bad, she would have to come over and sleep over at her house. And so my friend, like, saw her beaten up and bruised. So that's not something people know. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And it just sucks.
Yeah, it is. Seems insane. He's a weirdly antagonistic person, so that's not actually the biggest shock I've ever heard. Like, there's something about his tone that's very, like, combative. But anyway,
but, like, he's seen as this great philanthropist. I mean, yeah, at least that's how I thought of him.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it's definitely a circumstance where, I don't know, I guess it becomes a circumstance, all of these things, I think, where we need to, I think the culture needs to change. Like, accountability needs to change. Like, I believe in, like, change and forgiveness for, like, missteps. But for, like, crimes, that's a bit different. Obviously, hugely different. And there needs to be kind of, like, it's funny. Twitter and, you know, internet culture seems very easy to, like, hang people out to dry for, like, a base misstep that they then educate themselves on. But very willing to not draw a hard blacklist line to actual ethically deranged or criminal activity, you know? Like, that, I think that in terms of what we can do, there is a belief or a assumption or a norm that we are, like, that forgiveness has to happen, or that, like, personal life stuff doesn't matter, or that, exactly like what your friend said, like, what are we going to do? We can't stop watching Mission Impossible. Like, yet this idea that, like, it's not a choice, like, the idea that that's just the way it is, like, bad stuff happens and that's just the way it is, like, that, you know, people are going to get away with it and have no consequences. And, yeah, we kind of need to change the culture that it's acceptable for people to just, like, like what you said about R. Kelly and the documentary, totally valid. I had no idea he was still, like, touring, and I assumed that, like, because we knew he was crap, that he was not still active as an artist. I did not know that he was still active as an artist, to be very frank. And I just had, you know, paranoia. Like, I'll remember that one time that he was, like, he did those things, and now I'm embarrassed when Ignition plays. Like, I did not know that he was still currently making money and operating as a famous artist, probably because I don't like him, so therefore I do not follow his career. So the fact that people just keep going back to not having any consequences Yeah, what needs to change is probably, like, the hard stop of, like, we will not consume you anymore. Therefore, you have no career opportunities. Like, we are not going to, you know, allow you to have career opportunities because your behavior is not acceptable. I don't know what quantity of people would have to act in that way for that to be effective. Can you think of anyone who has totally had their career killed by something like this? Because I can only think of people who have had their career killed because they were the victim. Like a, you know, woman who spoke out about abuse, or like, you know, someone like Monica Lewinsky or something.
I feel like most of, like, the people I'm trying to, like, say, oh, yeah, that definitely happened to them, it's still too early because I feel like they're going to come back. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I feel like in 5 years, Kevin Spacey's going to have a 5-movie deal.
Kevin Spacey is already trying to come back. Did you see that horrific thing he did?
Yeah.
The creepy-ass trailer.
So I feel like...
I saw that crazy thing. Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I want to be like, oh, yeah, we, like, not we, but the collective, like, yes, we're finally taking action and things aren't, like, you know, there are consequences and people are seeing the benefits of it. Like, I just don't... I'm not confident that it's going to stick yet.
What's his name? Is it Bryan Singer? The one who raped little boys?
Oh, yeah. And then got another directing deal? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Multi-million dollars. It's fine.
And they didn't even take his name off the...
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Bohemian Rhapsody. And, like, yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. But people have known about that for years. I heard about that years ago with him. And it's only, like, I don't know. It's all very... very confusing and stressful, and I know that, like, some of the people that have spoken out about R. Kelly are doing so pretty strongly, but I don't know, like, what kind of person do you have to be aware of something? I understand not being aware, being, like, enthusiastic about someone, you know, or hiring someone or wanting to, you know, be a fan of someone when you're not aware, but I don't really understand how, like, you can... Like, who sits in an office and is like, yeah, we want to put Kevin Spacey in our movies. We believe that we believe that his art is worth that, or we believe that what he did wasn't a big deal.
Mm.
Who are these people? Like, who are they? I don't understand. Like, it's just, I don't know. And, yeah, I feel like the people that do get reduced to nothingness are, like, usually the cases that are unfair, like a humiliation or an embarrassment, you know, even back to the, I don't know, just, yeah, just, like, people get buried from shame, not in this kind of way, like, they get buried from shame because, like, they are the victim of something, like Janet Jackson at the Super Bowl, you know, for example, which was 1 million years ago, and again, in retrospect, like, such a weird situation between her and Justin Timberlake.
And Justin Not Timberlake wasn't affected at all.
Exactly. I'm like, what exactly did she...
And she was the one who did nothing. Do. She stood there.
Yeah. Anyway, so it's just an example of, like, the things that we don't think about enough in terms of, like, why something has been made acceptable. And people just need to, I don't know, be firmer about that, I guess. And
I'm so mad now. Brittany, can we talk about libraries?
Well, yeah, before we finish, I just want to say, I think that we're going to be having this conversation again because Sundance has just aired a similar documentary about Michael Jackson. So that's going to be a thing that comes up very soon, the reopening of this abuse case with Michael Jackson and his, you know, children in his bedroom. And that's gone up and down so many times over the years with people denying and confirming. And apparently there's a documentary that's pretty similar to the R. Kelly in terms of condemnation that may happen. But he has passed away, so it's not really going to be the same kind of scenario, I suppose.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. I can't get into another documentary right now. I did see the, what is it? The unfortunate thing about that one, too, is that it has the title Finding Neverland, which is already spoken for in play form and a horrible Johnny Depp movie. Yeah. So it's just adding on to the mess of everything. But anyway, let's talk about something good, which is libraries. So my hype this week is visiting your local library because, look, I was working on a post about TV shows that are based on books that are coming out this year. And I was like, a couple of them I've never heard of, and I've never heard of the source material. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go to the library and see if I can get these books because I'm not really that committed to like buying them. I'm kind of interested. And so I went to the library and I had to do an interlibrary loan, which, okay, my first job ever was working at a library. And I hated interlibrary loans because I just told this story at work today. And so I worked for a small town library, and currently I live in a small town and I go to my local library. It's like very tiny. And the librarians are all super nice, and some of them are like kind of young, and other people like, you know, have been working there probably since they were the age of the younger librarians, and now they're like in their late 50s, early 60s. All very lovely people. It's the county librarians. When you go to a bigger branch, they think they're better than you. So I always hated calling up the county librarians who were like, you know, like if you're in school and you have like a lunch mom monitor who's like a retired woman who's just like filling her time, watching kids on the playground, like during lunch hours. Worse than that. Like 10 times worse than any lunch lady you'll ever meet. They were just like, you know, they were the county library. They had a lot of things going on. And how dare your little small town library call them up because someone in your town wants to read a book that only they have. Whatever. So I went to the library and I had to get two books via interlibrary loan, which I went in and immediately started apologizing. I was like, I'm so sorry. These are going to be interlibrary loans. Like, and they're like, no, it's no problem. Don't worry about it. So maybe where I live now, the county library is a lot nicer. I have no idea. But the librarians were so nice. They have like these museum pass programs where you can like call ahead, reserve a museum pass and like go for free because they have memberships to like the museums in New York and here. And we have like a sculpture ground here and you can go and get the pass and go for free. It's just, it's, there's so much going on at your library. And I will say that my, not this library, but the library I went to in the previous town I lived in was, had the best like early 90s like framed posters of like celebrities holding books and being like, see what you can get with your library card.
Oh, and, yeah, I know them. Oh my God, I know.
The haircuts, leather jackets. Like, they were, it was amazing. Like, I think there was a Leonardo DiCaprio one. They are so great. But yeah, so I got like all of these books. And when you're looking, like, the one thing I will say is libraries need to update, like, the online catalog because it's, like, an archaic system that, like, it's rough. But I was looking up this, I've been watching Deadly Class on Sci-Fi, and it's really good. And there's a lot of, like, whenever they, like, talk about flashbacks or do, like, some exposition, they, like, show it in animated comic form. So it's, like, the panels from the actual comics, but like narrated over, and they kind of move and stuff because like the creator of the comic series is the showrunner, co-showrunner on the show. So anyway, I wanted to read the Deadly Class comics, and so I like ordered it, and I thought it would be like, you know, one of those like tinier ones, like the size of like a Sandman issue or whatever, but it's like,
no, giant. It was a big ass hardback. Yeah, yeah.
Huge book that like, yeah. They were like looking, cause I got an email that it was in. So I stopped at the library on Monday and I walk in and I'm like, oh, I have like a book here. And she's looking, she's like, she doesn't see it under my name. And then she like goes back and looks at the file again. She's like, oh, oversized. And I was like, oversized. And she like comes in like this giant, like, it's like a scene from a movie, like drops like in Buffy or something where Giles drops like a giant spell book on the counter. And I was like, yes, that is for me. So So I got that, and then I got like this other book called The Name of the Rose, which is going to be a series on Sunday.
Oh yeah.
But it's like set in like a 1300s monastery, and like a scandal is that like some people are
Umberto Eco, right?
Yes. I'm really excited for
it. Yeah, yeah, that's I didn't know they were making that. That's a pretty famous book. Yeah, it's I didn't know. Has that never been a movie before? It's going to be a movie now, it's been a movie.
It's a miniseries on Sundance now. I don't know what it's going to be on in the UK, but or like abroad. I don't even know how I'm going to watch it here because I have no idea what the heck Sundance Now is. It's like an app that I'm probably going to have to pay for that I have no idea what it is. But
a girl I know is making a series on Sundance Now. She's a deaf actress called Shoshana Stern. She was on Supernatural and she's written a show about like a deaf. It's like basically like a sitcom about like two deaf friends, like a married woman and a gay guy who are both deaf, and it's really great. But I've seen the pilot, but it's on Sundance, like they funded it. But I'm like, I don't know how to access this show, but apparently people really like it, so I don't know how to.
Yeah, I mean, A Discovery of Witches is also on Sundance now, like that.
Really?
Yeah, in the US it is.
Oh yeah, because when it was at Comic Con, it was so weird that show at Comic Con. It was there with Sky Arts from the UK, and no, it did not yet have a US distributor when it was at Comic Con. So that's very confusing.
Yeah,
carry on.
At New York Comic Con, when I went to the panel, they showed the pilot, and then it was just about to air in the UK, because it aired in the UK like from November through December, and then that was it. And then it came here in January. And yeah, so it was. I don't know. I still haven't watched the whole thing, but the pilot was good. But anyway, if you are, you know, watching your favorite TV series or whatever, libraries are still very popular because I was looking just to see what they had at, like, my local branch when I was at work one day during my lunch break. And I'm like, oh, let me just, like, peruse, see, like, what it – because, like, my library, it's the fiction – for some reason, the nonfiction section is, like, humongous, and then the fiction section is, like, a box. So I have no idea what the distribution is. But they don't really have a lot of copies of anything, and so I went into the system just to be like, oh, I wonder if, like, anyone's reading Good Omens because, you know, it's coming out on TV. Like, I was in, like, this TV mode, and I looked it up. And all the copies have, like, a 4-to-5 person hold on them for, like, all of the county. So I'm like, good. People are reading. Like, it just made me feel good about people using their libraries and, you know, they're staying current with what's on TV, too. Because I'm sure, although Good Omens, you should just read anyway, even if it wasn't coming to TV. But, you know, like, I just was checking in on some of my favorite series and people are reading them. And I think it's just really cool. They also... yes, if you're going to library, they also have, like, movies and stuff. You know, you can rent a movie.
It's really interesting. Do you guys have any of those library memberships that have, like, ebook subscriptions as well?
Yeah, mine does.
Yeah, we've got we're starting that at we've got a few because the library near my new house that I'm renovating, Rockdale, Sydney, is a really good library. It's pretty big, and it has, like, a local history section and stuff. It's, like, newly renovated. And it has all of these services, like Borrow Box, and there's a new one that's coming called Canopy, which is going to be really popular. It's like free content for not just books. I think that's, like, got streaming stuff on it as well. Like, it's a free streaming service for library memberships and stuff. And it's really cool, like, you know, ebooks, magazines, audiobooks, you know, ebook version or physical version. Yeah, I'm really impressed with the library there at the moment. I haven't really been going to one regularly for some time because where I was renting is not a good library. It's, like, very small. I mean, it's fine, but it's, like, very, 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 very small. It's, like, one room in the back of a hall. Like a back of a town hall, and I'm really impressed with the facilities of my current library at Rockdale, and yeah, I've been going there to work a lot. Like, I've been going there to, like, use it as my office, you know, basically, and Yeah, it's definitely on the, I hope, on the uptick, the involvement in local libraries, but...
Plus, they have lots of, like, amazing programs. Like, I was reading, one of my favorite things that I've ever read in my entire life was in my town bulletin, where the library has a program where the children can come and read to a seeing eye dog, because the, like, dogs are being trained to, like, be comfortable with, like, around people, and children need to practice reading out loud, so you can, like, schedule a time to come and read to the dog.
Wait,
Brittany. My heart melted in my chest.
Did you talk about this on another...
I did.
I just had a terrible, like, deja vu moment where I was like, no, I've heard Brittany talking about this before.
I just want to cover all my bases and make sure everyone knows about this, because I think it's the best thing that's ever happened.
Okay. As long as I'm not in the Matrix, it's fine.
No, this is old news.
You're not in the Matrix. It definitely has been brought up before when she was telling me about how her town was like Mayberry, which is a thing that I didn't know about. And yeah, just the amount of resources that libraries have, you know, whether it's, you know, computer access or... There's been lots of things where I'm like, oh, really? This is free? This is, wow. This is a thing that I can do for free, which is cool. My current library book that I have rented out is the Queer Eye, Love Yourself, Love Your Life, Queer Eye coffee table biography book, where they have all written different sections, which are actually very amusing, and I really like it. And I got, like, the ultimate... Sandman recently, because that was like a big... I have Sandman, you know, in paperback, but like they had the big annotated version that's like a like foot and a half wide, and I'm like, I can't buy this, and I borrowed it from the library and, you know, just brought it home. So I'm having a library resurgence in my life, and I really love it. I love visiting like impressive libraries in other cities, like the New York Public Library, and we went to the Los Angeles Library in downtown LA as well.
We went to the Brooklyn Library, right? I think it was just because it was so hot, but we went there anyway.
We went in there for a moment, yeah. Like, and it's just, I don't know, it's just a cool, you know, a wonderful opportunity. And yeah, I feel like mine's always kind of full, at least with the resource areas, like with people being able to... you know, sitting at the desks and working and studying and stuff. So, you know, I feel like it's like not that heavy on the books. Like it doesn't have that many books compared to people, but they can get, you know, they can get more books, you know, which is cool. It's just, yeah, I'm a fan. Who isn't a fan?
So that's my hype. I just wanted to, you know, talk about libraries. Do we want to go to your gripe, Natalie? Are you ready for it?
I suppose so. I mean, it is kind of touching on a couple of the things that we just mentioned, which is that, you know, Sundance Now and, you know, Call a Midwife and all of that kind of thing, which is just, you know, a resurging, constant resurging reminder of the, like, focus of U.S. audiences for media and about how... that could be improved on. Obviously, shows are made in different countries or content is made in different places and it's accessed, you know, it's licensed out to different distributors worldwide and that's fine. But, you know, I don't know if there would be a benefit to that becoming like a more universal system. The gripe is less about the access, though I am kind of annoyed by the access pretty constantly. Like, who region locks a YouTube video? Like, who can be bothered? Like, why?
And so stupidly sometimes, too. Like, the Schitt's Creek, the Canada version, they lock it for the US. And it's like, don't you want people to watch your show? But whatever.
Well, that's the thing. Like, BBC and CBC, like, you know, CBC for Canada, BBC. The site is free if you're in the country, but... not worldwide, and I assume that it's because it's being paid for from, like, your license fee if you're a member of the country. I don't know. Anyway, my concern is more, like, two things. Like, Brittany, I know that you hate award shows, and we've been over that, you know. But, like, films, for example, the Academy Awards, they, yes, they have best foreign film, but their main categories are still English-speaking productions from all places worldwide, right? Like, it's like, you know, a British film could be up for Best Picture in the same way that an American film or even an Australian film could, or whatever. Like, it's not really a thing done by network, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that stops media, like, you know, that's television or streaming service entering that awards show? Like, you know, compared to at the Golden Globes or the Emmys or something, you know? Oh, the Emmys is like, I know that's like prime, meant to be like primetime television, but is there any global scale of judging, like, you know, because, for example, like Call a Midwife, for example, always gets like, you know, at the BAFTAs and stuff. Or the National Television Awards in the UK. Is there anything that, like, kind of both, you know, judges and promotes content on a global scale? Like, you know, best comedy, like, you know, that could include shows from worldwide? Or is that not a thing?
I feel like there's nothing stopping them from entering. However, I don't think that, like, when you're watching the, even if they were to enter it, I feel like for an American audience or something, they wouldn't even show it. It would be like the Emmys where they show like the Creative Arts Emmys. Like, you know, like,
wow,
here's like the Spanish Film Emmys. Like, you know, like, I don't think that they would show.
Yeah, I guess.
Spanish Film Emmys is like an oxymoron because they wouldn't do film at the Emmys. But you know what I'm saying. Like, the,
yeah,
like, I feel like they wouldn't even put that on TV, even if they were included, but I'm really not sure what the rules are for submitting.
The gripe is twofold. One, on one side, it is the kind of focus of esteem, like the fact that everything looks inward at American media production, and that there are, you know, more people around the world watch American shows than American people, like, appreciate or watch or value shows made in other countries. Some do, but it's not a whole. And then, expanding on that, the fact that many American people, not necessarily yourselves, but many American people are really insular about that in the same way. They don't really seem to realize that they don't seem to realize that them being the center of the universe isn't normal. Like, not them, the individual, but, like, American, the way that Americans access things.
Do you feel, like, though, Natalie, like, yeah, do you feel, though, like, you feel this way because you are an English, you're from an English-speaking country, so you see this content and it, and, like, for example, like, in Mexico, I feel, yeah, like, I feel like they're not like, oh, why doesn't America make more content for us? They make their own content because they speak Spanish. So they make, yeah, Spanish content. But, like, for you, because, yeah, you can see all this content and you can understand it, you're like, why isn't it more easily accessible for me?
Yeah, it's not so much, yes, that it is definitely a thing for English-speaking countries, but my gripe isn't even so much that it's not accessible for me. It's that Americans aren't very conscious of the fact that it's not. Like, I know a lot of Americans who don't know that Netflix, that what they see on Netflix isn't what other countries see on Netflix. Like, that there is different licensing for different countries. Even the other day in the books discussion, Brittany, when I mentioned Book Depository,
mm-hmm,
which is a free shipping worldwide book retailer. So it's a retailer that most people I know use to buy books if they need to buy books online. It's, you know, it's not the same as Amazon. It is actually a UK-based company, but they ship free to every country in the world, or nearly every country in the world, and their prices are pretty good. And apparently no one of the American book writers that we were discussing this with, like book journalists, knew about it because they were so used to Amazon shipping being free or whatever, however it is that they get their books, with absolutely zero awareness that, like, if I asked you off the top of your head, would you assume that I had a way, if I wanted to buy a book, would you assume that I had a way for that to come to me in the mail without paying a shipping cost?
I would.
Yeah. Nowhere except America has that. So, or like that I know of. Amazon, if you have like an Amazon Prime membership, I think maybe within the UK they have distribution. But we didn't even have an Amazon distribution warehouse in Australia until really recently. So, you know, stuff like the cost of shipping for something like that. I'm like, why aren't we putting Book Depository in our link suggestions for readers for the book section? And people are like, I don't know what that is. I would never use that. And I'm like, everyone who's not American would use that because it's not... Because what you get on Amazon where the book doesn't have shipping, we don't have that. No one has that. And then, you know, that, you know, oh, something being on Netflix is not necessarily licensed on Netflix in every country. So I'm kind of used to navigating, like, the access to content. And I kind of, you know, I understand global, you know, and national markets, and I understand that distribution deals are different in different places. Totally fine. What I keep being amazed by and slightly annoyed by is the fact that apparently that the people making the content or consuming the content, like, don't care, like, that there are people outside America who have trouble accessing it, or that they're just not conscientious of the fact that what they take for granted is not the way that it works for everyone else. And I think that's probably a bigger cultural issue that's not to do with media as well. But recently I've seen a few things that have just made me really surprised how naive American creators and consumers are to the audience around the world that cares about them, that is not getting the same kind of access to content, that it's not easy or that it's more costly. I kind of accept that it's easier, more costly, but I'm kind of surprised that people aren't aware of it and therefore like a little bit more sympathetic about it, I guess. And yeah, so I'm really curious about like to quiz some people kind of about like what would you do in circumstance A or B or C if you wanted to achieve this? And hearing about that from different countries, like about what they would have to do in order to get what is normal in the American consumer market. Shipping costs is a big one. Obviously, region locking of content is a big one. But yeah, I'm just kind of amazed and annoyed by it on a regular basis, and more the attitude of America about it than than an objection to the nitty gritty of the legal distribution rights and stuff like that. Like, they assume that everything is that way, and it's just really not.
Can you give me an example? Because I don't think I fully understand.
What kind of example?
Like, are you? I don't know.
It's okay.
like an example of something. Because I feel, to me, this seems like very general. And
I mean, it is, general.
I'm a little bit confused.
That's okay. Okay, so one example would be, oh, okay, here's a random one. Someone on Twitter, the other day when I was watching the Supernatural episode last week, I was tweeting about it, and someone came at me on Twitter quite angrily, why aren't you doing this, that I wasn't hashtagging the show name and therefore taking away from the ratings. And I'm like, I'm an account outside the USA. That's very public knowledge. My tweets don't count towards the social media ratings because I'm not a US viewer. And they were like, oh my God, I had no idea, and stuff like that. You know, when we were talking the other day in the book section about, I was like, you know, why are we not doing book depository links? Like, no one was objecting, but, like, a few people were like, oh, that doesn't really matter. That's not as good as Amazon and stuff. Never thought of it. And I'm like, okay, but everyone that's not America doesn't get that kind of access that you get. We don't get Barnes & Noble, Amazon, IndieBound. Like, none of those things are accessible to anyone worldwide for free shipping, you know, let alone, you know, something like Barnes & Noble where it's not accessible at all. Like, can we be conscientious okay. of the fact that there are worldwide, you know, worldwide people who, you know, the internet is a worldwide platform, therefore your thinking is a bit too insular about what's normal.
Okay. I guess my question then, though, is, like, for example, a lot of these things that you mentioned, I know about because I studied abroad. So I had an opportunity mm-hmm. to go somewhere else. And that's how I found out that Netflix is different in different places and things yeah. like that. But that comes from me, from a place of privilege for me. So mm-hmm. I would argue then that some people, not everyone, definitely there is people who don't care. But I do think a lot of people, it's not because it's coming from a place of not knowing. So
yeah, I know. Yeah, I totally get you. I totally know what you mean. It's just interesting because you are saying that for people to be aware of that kind of thing, they need to have the privilege of external experience outside their own. And what I'm saying is that everyone else has that experience because they're not underprivileged in the way that you're describing, but, like, everyone else has to deal with that. Everyone else has to put up with that. We can't afford that level of obliviousness, if you know what I mean. If we want to get to the same level of access that America takes for granted, being aware of that, like being aware of how American stuff works and how ours is different, is something that we have to take as a given.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. So I totally understand the reasons that people in America wouldn't be aware of it, and that can come from a place of privilege. But on the flip side, it is something that no one else can afford that. Like, no one in Australia is like, oh, I don't know, American Netflix is different because I've never been to America. They know because we're on a lower tier no matter what, if you know what I mean, mm-hmm. in terms of the access to the content. So that's kind of the thing. It's like, that obliviousness comes from privilege. The obliviousness comes from taking for granted that America is treating America like the center of the universe. So that is kind of what I mean. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like, no, I don't really it does make sense.
Yeah. It does make sense. And it sucks that I think, though, that the... Okay. I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm being so contradictory today. But I think that America does treat itself like it's the center of the universe. And I think it's unfortunate because it has so much... It's cultivated so much power, and specifically in terms of mm-hmm. entertainment, like, that's become the center.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, again, I'm comparing it to Mexico. Like, I feel like Mexico thinks has its own things that are the center of the universe. So, do you know what I mean? Like, America's prioritizing its content for the people that are going to pay for it in America. And I feel like every country does that. It's just more obvious because entertainment is, there is so much more entertainment in
yes.
America.
No, I totally get that from the level of the creator level and the distribution rights level. Totally get that. I'm more talking about the cultural level of the pop of the consumer. Just being considerate citizens of the world, basically. Like, I'm not necessarily talking about, like, how I can get better access to things. It's just kind of like, you know, global distribution rights and, you know, the way that content is produced for certain countries is definitely a thing. But I think that there's probably a lack of awareness Australia is very interesting because Britain and the US both cater to their own audiences, whereas everything, there is Australian content, like there's made for, you know, like some Australian content, but the majority of our content is British or American. Like it's not, we, Australia doesn't treat itself like it's the center of the universe in the way that America does, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. We are depending on 99, you know, not 99%, but like I'd say like 75% foreign content of everything, like the, you know,
mm-hmm.
So it's less about, and it's definitely not about, you know, fixing the way that global things are produced. Like, you know, even Netflix, you know, Netflix is pretty universal. If something's a Netflix property, it will be on all Netflix streaming worldwide, even if it's a US-based show, like it was filmed in the US. And Netflix also makes foreign language things that are on every Netflix platform worldwide. That's kind of a more global system. My issue isn't, like, American network television not considering their foreign audiences when they're making the show. It's that American fans and consumers are not conscientious of the restrictions that equally valid fans and consumers worldwide have to what they take for granted, if that makes sense. And I get that you're saying that those people wouldn't be aware of that until they've come, you know, till they've experienced it outside the America because they have the privilege to do so. But it's also, like, they have the internet. Like, it's also comes from a place of, like, I guess taking for granted that level of access that they have and, like, the things that they're surprised about when I'm like, oh, yeah, we can't do that in Australia or we can't get that in Australia is often shocking to me to the point of not offensiveness, but, like, presumption. Like, so much presumption that everything is kind of equal for, not equal, but everything is, yeah, accessible as easily for anyone as it is for them. And it's just really not. Like, mm-hmm. It's just very difficult to describe because I totally get what you're saying about privilege, but the flip side is a different sort of privilege. It's like the privilege of having that.
The privilege of not having to inform yourself.
To worry about it. Yes, yes, exactly.
Or educate yourself.
And so it's just, you know, for me, it's probably particularly annoying because I am, like, you know, a foreign Australian person working with American media a lot. But it is just a, you know, just keeps surprising me how shocked they are that stuff is different. And it gets to the point of that being, like, a trickle-down metaphor for, like, how possibly they say it's viewed on a wider scale. But anyway, it's all good. If you're not, you know, if you're not in America, you should definitely buy your books on Book Depository. The end. Like, I don't have a solution for that. Like, you know, distribution of content being created in certain companies is not really the beef that I have. It's more the oblivious that people have about worldwide consumers, I guess. Australia is a funny little niche for that. Britain is not so bad because they do produce so much of their own stuff, but we don't in Australia. Like, no one cares about Australian drama or comedy series. Like, I don't watch any myself, so...
I watched an Australian web series once.
I've seen an Australian reality show.
Wow, which one?
Instant Hotel.
I have never heard of that.
Really? Mm-hmm. It's on Netflix. Apparently it aired, and they're like, Netflix is like a Netflix original. Like, it just came out, and it aired in Australia like 4 years ago.
I have never heard of this. I mean, that's probably another thing. Like, Australia makes no effort into actually, like, creating content that people want. And they especially don't. They especially don't put any effort into creating content that other people in the world might want. So that is a very interesting... I've now Googled Instant Hotel. I've definitely never heard of
you
it.
You should... But... I'm kind of shocked because I Googled it and, like, it had a huge following. People loved it. It has villains that got famous. Apparently, that's what the article said.
Well, we do make a lot of reality. Like, you know, MasterChef, you know, The Bachelor Australia, you know, that kind of stuff. I guess that there's, like, that level of television production here that people are pretty invested in, but I don't really watch any of that. Like, for fictional programming and stuff like, you know, cost and access and, you know, things like that, it's not the same. But anyway, the internet makes the audience of most media pretty global, and so it would be good if, you know, despite legal and cost restrictions, it would be good if people could be aware of that, I guess. If only to stop me being annoyed, but that's fine.
No,
it's not that big a deal in the grand scheme of the universe.
No, I think it's a fair point, especially like when you cover a show or like work with a show that has a big international following too as an American writer, then you definitely just become exposed to like people not being able to watch something until like a day after you. Like here, sure, we'll complain that like people here complain that like Sherlock is airing 5 hours after it airs in the UK. I'm like, do you really want to watch it at like 4:00 p.m. so that you can watch it the same time that the audience that it was originally made for is watching it? Like, calm down. I mean, it's like, it's the same thing with coasts here. Like, everything is live on the East Coast and nothing is live on the West Coast, which is
oh,
like...
Oh, yes. And they get, like, spoilers from, like...
But and like, yeah. I think I did finally, like, I think I finally understand, Natalie, that your gripe is you're mad that people are not more globally aware of their privilege of what they get for living in the U.S.
Yes. But then again, if I go to a doctor because I need a psychologist or I've broken my leg, I don't have to pay any money.
Yeah, so that's fair.
Flip side of that.
But so I get to watch Star Trek Discovery on Thursdays at 8:30, and the rest of the world has to watch it Fridays when it hits Netflix and can go to the doctor.
I thought Star Trek Discovery, isn't that on CBS All Access?
Yeah, which also is its own problem.
Okay. I wasn't aware that they did it. I don't know anything about CBS All Access. Anyway, we don't need to get into that.
Yeah, no, there are definitely flip sides. It's not like I definitely don't think America is the best country in the world. No offense. I think the you know, living conditions leave much to be desired. It's just an... That, you know, what I'm talking about is really only one example of the weird insularness that America has in general, though, I think. So, like, the weird, like, central focus that they assume that everyone is either in line with them or, like them but not as good. Like, as opposed to the awareness of where they actually fit in the global scale of how people live, I suppose. Like that, yeah, a lot of Americans just don't seem to be that aware that people in, you know, of course cultures all over the world are super different, but that like their most closely related, like westernized countries don't live the same, like the UK and Australia and New Zealand and stuff like that, that they don't live the same way that America does. Like, you know, even though they're the closest, you know, westernized countries, that just the way that they live is just not the same, and America seems to not be aware of that or think that they are winning at it, and I don't think they're winning at it, no offense. But, yeah, I will definitely take my free healthcare over the YouTube restrictions or people being silly about Amazon. That's fine. But just as a gripe, you know, it is a gripe, not like a social you know, like not like a social crusade. So, yeah.
Well, speaking about a show that we could have probably all watched years before Australia did, Adiana, do you want to talk about Smallville?
Sure.
And this is your hype.
This is my hype. You've
done your grind. Yeah.
This is the, maybe this format is not good for me. Maybe I'm just not in a good headspace. Okay, let me get amped up. All right, something good.
What do you want to do? I can talk about mine.
I don't know
how to help you, Adiana.
I don't know.
I'm letting you do whatever you want, and it's still not enough.
I don't know. I'm trying to get hyped up. Okay.
Do you want me to talk about mine? I don't care.
Sure, let's talk about yours. I don't care either.
Oh my god. Okay, so back to Grace.
Solitaris. I listened to Natalie. It was nice.
Okay, so back to complaining about some stuff. This past week, not NBC, Fox took a stab at their live musical for the winter season, and they did Rent, and it was not fantastic.
Oh, but, I did not see it yet.
It wasn't great. However, I liked a lot of aspects about it. I just don't think it came together. And I think by having a very, very one-sided conversation with my mom on a drive home this week.
well, where you just, where you talked, just said like, things and she nodded.
And she was like, are you okay? on the state of live musicals on TV. Now, granted, she did not even watch it, and I ran her ear off about it. But I came to this conclusion. I don't think, and this is all everything that's been done, minus, I will say, I feel like Jesus Christ Superstar is an outlier because it was billed as a concert. So I'm going to just put that, like, there's a little asterisk on Jesus Christ Superstar. However.
So whatever you say is not referring to Jesus.
Yeah, because I feel like it was very different, but the concept of bringing a live musical to television bothers me on a level that would apply to anything past and future. Like it's a blanket statement is that I don't think that they will work ever because I was talking to my mom about this and I said, well, did you ever watch a musical on TV? And she said, yes. She remembers watching it with her mom, dad, and brother. She watched Sound of Music. It was on TV. But it was at a time where she wasn't sitting down on the couch with the computer open, a cell phone in her hands, Twitter up, and the TV on, barely watching it. Which is, I feel like, how a majority of people are watching these live musicals. So the idea of, like, when live musicals are happening, like, many, many, many iterations ago, when they were televised, is the fact that, like, you're sitting down, there's literally nothing else you can be doing except maybe reading a book. It's the only thing on TV that's, like, worthy of your attention. There's not Netflix, there's not Hulu, you're not recording it to watch a week later on demand. And it's just you and the TV, and that is the only, like, barrier between you and the live performance. So, like, when you're in the theater, there really isn't a barrier. You're there, you're watching it. That is the intimate connection. When you're watching it on TV, you're only one step removed from the intimate connection. There's you and there's the TV, and, like, maybe your microwave goes off because popcorn's ready. Like, there's not a lot really going on at the time where, like, live musicals were, like, first brought into, like, the world on TV. Now, like, there's just, you're, like, four or five screens removed from your TV. So, like, you can pause it now. Like, you can just, like, hit pause and come back to it later. You're either, like, tweeting about it, and I'm guilty of it too. Like, I noticed it watching Rent. Like, this is how it came up. I was like, was I even really immersed in it? And the fact that you then, this particular performance, so one of the lead actors, Brennan Hunt, got injured during the dress rehearsal. And so
Yeah, I saw some clips of this, that he was in a wheelchair, like, waiting to kind of lean on his set piece, like, in between songs.
No, he didn't they did pre-record it all the way to the last number. So, this is what happened. So, he got hurt. There's no understudies for these. They tape the dress rehearsal, because they have a full audience there, some press is there, they do, like, a press thing in the morning, they perform it all live, straight through, for the audience, and it's taped. Now, they did this for the other live musicals, especially, like, Grease, the outdoor scenes. They were going to use the pre-recorded footage if it rained, like, for the big carnival finale. So, like, if it was raining on the, like, lot, they couldn't go outside and film all this stuff. So they had the pre-recorded stuff. They ended up not needing to use it. Here, he was hurt in a wheelchair. They performed a concert-style version for the audience that was in L.A. up until the finale into Your Eye.
No Day, but yeah.
So, like, only, like, yeah. The last 10 minutes of Rent Live.
How bizarre. Live.
So what they did was they just showed the dress rehearsal recording for the rest of it. So it wasn't even live. So that's where I started to realize, I'm like, this was live at one time, but I'm not watching it as closely because you kind of already know that nothing's going to go wrong. Like, because, like, someone's not going to fall, like, this would be horrible, but, like, you know, someone's not going to trip on the scaffolding during, like, Out Tonight. Like, you know, like, it's all already happened. So, like, you were taken away even further from the live immersive element because you know what you're watching is not live. The most exciting part, honestly, was when the two timelines were emerging, they were running out of pre-recorded footage where he wasn't injured because Brennan Hunt did get injured during the dress rehearsal, like not on stage, it was off stage, and he had to like sit on a table like and do the final number for the audience after like a half hour delay. So they were like running out of like the straight run pre-recorded version into like the live version. And that was exciting. It was like, okay, when are we switching live? When are we switching live? When are we switching live? Like, when is that little live thing going to come up in the corner of my TV? And it did for the final 10 minutes, like the whole original Broadway cast came out and sang Seasons of Love. It was great and wonderful, but that was it. That was the only 10 minutes that was live. And so like, there's just so, I want the live musicals to work so much, but, like, the ratings aren't there. I don't know how many more they're going to put on because they're, A, not bringing in the audience, and they're just, honestly, none of them have been good. I haven't watched one, again, asterisk, Jesus Christ Superstar, where I've been like, that, I want to watch that again, I want to watch this number again, I haven't watched any of them again. And Aaron Tveit was in one. Do you know how hard it is for me not to go back and watch it?
Yeah.
Every single thing from Grease, except, like, the gifs of him during, like, the gym scenes, because he's, like, wearing those really short shorts. But, like, oh, the fact I haven't felt the need to go back and watch any of these. The day after Jesus Christ Superstar, though, I watched it again, because I really enjoyed all of the performances from that. And I think they just had a strong group of singers. And that's not to say that everyone else isn't a good singer. Everyone in Rent had an incredible voice. I don't think that they had the stamina to do a completely sung through musical. Like, at certain points, it was just flat, or it was like, the cadence was off. They were tired. You could tell that they were exhausted. Like, it was, Vanessa Hudgens was phenomenal. I think she should be in everything.
I mean, she was also good in Grease.
Yeah, and as well. She's just good. Like, she just, you can tell that, like, she wanted that role. And Brennan Hunt actually was a fantastic, Roger. But, you know, it's just, unless they were, like, in a big moment of their own solo song or solo part, like, that was the only time you were, like, blown away by their voice. Everything else was just so, like, oh my god. Like, Christmas Bells was so, like, tragically long and drawn out, and I've never felt that way listening to and or watching Rent before. So I feel like we're losing something, A, by being so far removed from, like, the live intimacy of, like, how you're supposed to connect to live musicals being on TV in the first place, like, what the primary reason for bringing something live is. I think right now, the spectacle, like, oh my God,
Brittany, what? I'm so sorry, but you're so wrong. And I've just been, like, holding my breath. Speaking of people who are in their insular lives, I feel like you feel like this because you live so close to New York, and so you get to experience musicals all the time. And for most of middle America, for literally most of America, they will never see a musical on stage in their life, like a Broadway caliber kind of musical. They'll see like a school, like a high school production, maybe, if that. So for most people, this is like the only way they will ever get to experience a musical that's of high quality. So for that reason, I feel like it's very important. I will give you, I feel like, I do think that the live element makes it a lot more exciting. Mm-hmm. And definitely, I think it makes it 100 times more exciting. And I'm surprised that they don't have understudies, especially considering what happened to Vanessa Hudgens when her dad died
a couple
years ago. That's kind of shocking. So I really feel like that deflated this play, even though I didn't watch it because I just don't like Rent. They should all pay their rent.
I know. Yeah, that's a whole nother story.
That's another issue. So, like, is it ever going to be as exciting as seeing it on stage? No. But I think that for a lot of people, this is the only way they're ever going to get to see Rent or get to see something like this. Also, you're wrong because Grease was really delightful and I rewatch it all the time. It was really good.
Well, I'm happy to be wrong, but I really would like to push back actually a little bit because I've seen a ton of shows and that is a huge privilege. But at the same time, I think that there's a better way to do it. Like, I think that having seen shows, like, I don't think that they're getting, like, this to me feels like a not good production. Like, I think something fundamentally needs to change in the way that they're even produced, like, down to even just something as simple as tell the audience to shut up at certain points. Like, I don't like the, especially, I know you didn't watch it, but like Rent had a lot of problems with like sound in the fact that like you couldn't hear an entire song over the audience. And so like that's something, you can't account for when you're doing something live. Like sound problems are going to happen. Like it could happen anywhere. It could happen in your high school production. It could happen on Broadway. Like all the mics could go out. Who knows? But, like, I do think that there's, if you're going to be putting something on for people who haven't seen anything ever, there has to be a better way to do it. I don't think they figured it out yet. And these are great trials, but they're just not good.
It's interesting. Because I agree with both in that, you know, everyone knows that I am 100% pro, you know, distribution of Broadway culture to some way on screens that's accessible. I totally believe in it. I don't know what would be a better option in this case in terms of like, for me, the live element isn't that exciting. Like if I was the viewer watching live, I mean, I never get to watch anything live like that regardless, but like, you know, obviously I live in Australia, which is not accessible to Broadway, but I go there and I've seen many, many shows. So I kind of know the scope of what's being talked about. For me, the live element isn't the most important, so I don't know if it would be better to produce a musical event for television with a celebrity cast and film it and edit it like the way that, you know, something like Newsies, the music, when they did the filmed production of Newsies that then ended up being broadcast in cinemas. That was shot, like, pretty similar to this. It wasn't as involved in, like, you know, running through the crowd and stuff like that. But it was, like, it wasn't just a camera pointed at a stage. It was, you know, cuts to close-ups and, you know, that kind of thing. It was a filmed stage production rather than a live performance. And that level of editing, like, you know, made a really good production that works on a screen in a way that it wouldn't necessarily work in the theater. So if people didn't care about the live element, I would say do that. Like, get your performance really good and shoot it for television. Like, shoot, you know, shoot it with different angles and different close-ups and different sets, like, in a way that a theater doesn't allow. But, you know, the thing that I, you know, you liked Jesus Christ. One performance that I really liked, and again, this didn't go out live. This was done as and broadcast later, but it was still a live event, was the Wicked 15th anniversary concert, which was just a selection of, it wasn't a show, it was a, you know, selection of performances. But that's something that I feel like was really well received from all of the different stars who participated in that and just focused on the songs. So I don't know if that would be a better option, but I don't know. To me, the live aspect doesn't matter, so I would say do it like you're doing it, but do it a bunch of times so it's really good, and then air it on a certain night, and maybe have, like, live, you know, live tweeting or live commentary or something, but I don't know. Like, yeah, Brittany, what is your actual solution to this at the moment?
Well, that's what I was going to say, actually, was bring up the Newsies performance, or, like, even, I know, like, Allegiance did it, where they released it in theaters. Yeah. Bandstand has done it, where they released it in theaters. And it is exactly what happened with Rent. It's a live performance. Like, there is an audience. You can hear them. Like, you know, you're in...
They shot...
Yeah, you're in the theater space. Yes, the sets aren't, like, as crazy and impressive, but I don't... But you're getting... The more you're getting a theatrical set, and some Broadway sets are, like, incredible. Like, they're amazing what they can do on the stage. And, you know, like, you don't, yeah, you're not, like, walking outside into the Fox lot and seeing a carnival, but, like, that's, like, a huge scale thing. And I do think that they pulled off Grease. Grease is definitely up there in terms of, like, you know, what's her face from Girls. Allison Williams, like, flying as Peter Pan. Like, there was a huge step up between Peter Pan and Grease live. Like, they're just night and day. So I think that there's a way that you could, I think the point of it, too, is, like, it becomes where are you losing the theatrical versus the spectacle is, like, where I'm getting thrown off. Like, if you want to see something, like, live and have access to theater and have a, like, that kind of production, like, your Grease Live is not what you would see if you had access to Broadway all the time. You wouldn't see that.
Yeah. You know, like, I think a high school production of Grease is closer to what you'd see in the Broadway stage than the television version of Grease. Like, it's a very different experience, and I appreciate both. For me, I think that what they're doing would work as a TV event without the live element. I think that if that's that important to people, then I don't really know how to speak to that, because I can't really imagine that being, like, that important to me. But I would rather it be, like, a filmed show, and they did it a couple of times, you know, exactly as it is. They did, like, say they sold tickets or even gave away tickets to three performances of a filmed show that was done straight through as the show is. And then they took those three footage, you know, they filmed that on different cameras, they took that footage, and then they pieced it together, and they made a broadcast version that was, like, a perfect edit of that. To me, that would be great. It just wouldn't have the live element. So I don't know if the live element is, like, people's number one priority, but if it is, then that won't work. But if it's not, like, I definitely support the thing conceptually, but I don't know, like... Obviously, these aren't shows that are currently being done on broadcast. They're, like, one-off stunt casting, you know, like, celebrity events.
And, so, like,
it's a bit different.
And the people who are signing on, like, are very good live performers. It's not a matter of talent or, like, you know, who cares? If they're signing up to do it, they're signing up for the rehearsals and the dress rehearsals and running through it so many times anyway that I don't think it would make a difference. But, I mean, Adiana, tell me if I'm completely off base as someone who doesn't go to see Broadway shows.
To, versus what, Natalie's opinion to do it similarly and not do it live, or your opinion to do it like a Broadway show?
I guess both, because I don't know that we're saying
too many different things, but.
I personally, I like it live because I think there's something a little bit exciting about it. It makes me feel like I'm a part of the audience. Like my, okay. like my reaction matters in the moment. Like I'm reacting to it. So I do like that part. And I would be, for example, like the grease thing, how it rained that day. And then you went outside and you saw them, how everything was wet, how the carnival was wet. Like that was kind of exciting knowing like, oh, that was today. Like that's right now. Right now I could go drive over there and I would see them. so that I think that part is kind of exciting. I also just, I really love the Grease one. So I think that having it be on TV, you should get to take advantage of some things like that. You get to have more elaborate staging and things like that. So for me, I think Grease was the best one done. And that's been my favorite. That's probably actually the only one I liked. I mean, also since we're not talking about Jesus Christ Superstar. Because I haven't really cared for the NBC ones, but I think that's just because they are not good.
Yeah, they weren't
musicals to begin with.
Yeah.
I also think the choice of the show really matters. Like, I don't think Rent, it's not the one. Rent is not the one for this kind of event. I don't know why they thought Rent was the way to go, because that is just not ever a show that I would have chosen for something like this. You need something that's easy, and I get kind of they thought this was easy to execute well because it's not that complex. It's not like Les Miserables with a big, like, you know, stage. Like you can do Rent pretty simply and effectively in terms of the staging, so I kind of get why that was an aspect, but you know, I don't know. It's just not quite like that. Like, it's just not tonally
I see what
a
you
good
mean.
Match for that. You know, like, it's a depressing show. Like, it should be something. This needs to be something kind of light and easy to execute. Like, yeah. You know, in order to really nail it live on camera. Yeah.
I can't think of
shows that would be good.
I think part of the reason, like, why I think that Grease was good is that I don't really care for Grease. It's just fine. Like, it's just an okay musical. But because everybody knows it, they were able to update it. And I felt like they made it a little bit more contemporary. Like, I felt like it was just a little bit more feminist than the yeah. movie. So I think that's nice. I feel like, have they done Hairspray? They did, right?
Yeah.
But it was also not good, right?
Hairspray was fine. I mean, again, like, there were elements where they were like, we're inside, now we're outside, we're inside, now we're outside. Like, that does nothing for me. I get that, like, maybe, again, living in LA, oh, I've been there. I could drive over to that lot right now and see them performing this. But, like, it's, like, they did too much of that. They're, like, inside, outside. For the final number, the final Hairspray number, which takes place in Corny Collins' studio, like, they were outside. I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Mm. Why would you choose to do this? I feel like there's, like, just too much pressure to make it big, and I think the carnival pulled it off because you could not do that on a stage. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't. It was very cool. But, you know, like, the other choices were just, not great.
Oh, do we know what ones are coming up?
Bye Bye Birdie is canned. That's not happening. I think... I honestly have no idea.
I feel like happy ensemble ones are probably the kind to do.
Agreed. I think that, like something. Yeah,
I forgot about The Wiz. Rent. The Wiz was okay.
Grease is a perfect one because it is cheerful and relatively easy to execute. And
oh, they're doing Hair. Cute. What are they gonna do for the final number?
What are they gonna do? That's awkward. Have they done Godspell? That might be a bit too. Well, they did Jesus Christ Superstar. Like, yeah, I suppose Godspell's also like kind of they did depressing, like, because that's like
they did like a Christmas flexible. Story, like that was fun around Christmas time. Like they've hit like all the ones that I think they could have so far.
And then I'm kind of like, you know, West Side Story, that has a sad ending, obviously, but it is also like that's a really big dance number that's like not necessarily that easy to do in the moment.
Maybe like in the Heights.
In the Heights. Yep. That's exactly what I was. Yep. I think In the Heights would be probably the best option that I can think of at this point. So, I don't know, it's just interesting, I guess. It's just an interesting, and maybe some of the old ones, maybe something like Gypsy or like, you know, like something old, like Guys and Dolls.
Yeah, like, or even Funny Girl.
Little Shop of Horrors or something.
I'm surprised they haven't announced a Little Shop.
Yeah, and like, did you ever see the movie version, the filmed movie of Reefer Madness? I don't think that would go down for this, but the Kristen Bell version of Reefer Madness. Hadn't. Hilarious. So that's kind of, you know, something that would work if we wanted to put that
on. I'm sure the Mamma Mia rights are tied up somewhere too. Like, I feel like they can't produce network. That.
Mamma Mia would work, yeah. Yeah, Little Shop in the Heights and... I can't even remember what musicals exist. Not something tragic. Like, no tragedy. Nothing too... Like, you can't do something like... Something, you know, something rotten that's, like, a massive period set.
Yeah.
Like, you need something contemporary.
You cannot do Spring Awakening. There's so many red flags.
No. Yeah, like, it's just an interesting thing to think about, I suppose. But I don't know. Interestingly, what you mentioned about, like, being, you know, having the screens open and the, you know, the not the focus on it. See, I find it pretty easy to focus on a musical on screen when I'm not distracted by anything else. But that then means that I don't care if it, like, has that inside-outside element. Like, it could just be in a black box and I would, like, you know, watch it. You know, like, you know, I've sat through, like, a very Potter musical or whatever, you know, however many times, which is, like, a black box YouTube filmed production. Like, I have no issue watching a staged musical on a screen, you know, no matter how elaborate or simple, but the distraction does kind of take away from it. That being said, like, side note, one of the things that I've been doing this year, Leo and I, when we actually sit down, unless I'm watching something for work where I'm taking notes on purpose, when we sit down to watch something purely to watch it, we I've been making us put our phones, like, out of reach, like, so that we can't absently, like, look at something, even if it's something that the show sparks. Like, I have a piece of paper and I'm like, you know, Google this later, like, whatever it is, like, the medical disease mentioned on Call the Midwife or, like, you know, something like that. So I've been really trying to get only that one degree of separation that you mentioned earlier, Brittany, so that might also be an aspect.
I'm also surprised that you would watch TV like that, Brittany, because you're such a fan. Like, first of all, I can't do two things at once. I can't even... You also watch TV with subtitles, though. I literally can't because I can't focus on reading something and listening to it at the same time. So, like, I have to have... the lights have to be off. I have to have nothing... Like, if somebody walks in, I have to turn it off and start back
up. Yeah, you create, like, a mini cinema, like, immersion.
Because otherwise I can't focus.
So, well, if I'm watching something, like, it depends. So, for, like, something time, if I'm watching something that I like, everything's off. Like, if I'm watching, the problem with, like, Star Trek is that I have to watch it on the computer, but it's full screen, and I don't have my phone on me. So, if I'm watching something that, like, I'm either...
Can't you...
What?
Can you get a HDMI cable and just connect it to the
screen?
I
can cast it to my Chromecast, but, like, at that point, it's more effort.
Okay.
But the thing is, like, with certain things, like, especially shows that are, like, on TV, like, at that moment, I could try to live tweet something. It'll never work. Like, Rent, like, those things, though, like, where I'm writing something, like, and it has to be done the minute it's over or it's lost, like, I had to be on my computer, like, writing about it as it was happening. Otherwise, it's, like,
gone to the ether at that point. But that's for like very specific things. Like I knew going into Rent I wasn't going to like it because I feel like I was just already let down by everything. But for like shows that I really like Shadowhunters or like if I'm watching a screener of something, everything's off. Like I'm not, I'll either, the bare minimum I'll have with me is a pen and paper. But like, for example, when The Americans was on, I would power down my phone. So, like, I couldn't even have it on. Like, it wouldn't go off. Like, I wanted to sit there and watch it. That show, also, half of the show sometimes was in Russian, so you had to read it. So, like, you really had to pay attention. Otherwise, you'd miss something, the whole plot line. But, like, it really just depends on the show. I know that, like, sometimes we've had discussions where it's like, are you really engaging? Like, you know, like every, I don't understand how people can live tweet every single thing that happens. I'm like, you must not, you must only be listening to it.
Are you looking at the screen?
I'm like, are you able to type without looking and get the hashtag right? I would never be able to do that. So like there are, I'll tweet something maybe during a commercial break, but if the show is on my screen, I'm not looking at my phone or my computer screen. Like, I'll look at it during a commercial break, like, or if I'm watching, like, a movie or something, or I'm putting something on in the background, that's different. But if I'm sitting down to watch something, like, I watched, a few weekends ago, I watched Sex Education, and I, like, watched the whole thing through, and I was like, oh, I'll just have this on while I'm doing, like, housework and stuff. But no, if I wanted to wash a dish, I paused it and washed the dish and then came back. Like, I was so...
Interesting.
It depends on if I'm, like, into it or not. It's really a case-by-case thing. So I wouldn't go as far as to say a blanket statement, I don't know how you watch this and tweet about it and do this all the time, because that's not the case. It's really a show-by-show thing.
And then when you watch something, like you said you recently rewatched Frasier,
yeah,
is that like background material because you know it already, or like, or is that different?
Well,
is
that still like,
I am focused completely on.
Yeah, no, that was an example of a show that took a turn. It started out as background noise for like, because I like to have something on when I'm falling asleep, and I usually just default to Frasier because it would always be on Hallmark Channel after Golden Girls reruns, and then I'd sleep timer, I knew I'd fall asleep, and I'd inevitably fall asleep when the Frasier time slot was on. So I don't have cable in my bedroom at my new apartment, so I was like, oh, it's on Netflix, I'll just put it on. And so what happened is, though, I like was like, oh, I don't remember some of these episodes, or like I haven't seen them in a long time, so I started watching it, and because I'm going to sleep, I don't have my phone in my bed, like it's on a nightstand somewhere, so I was actively watching it and like not distracted by anything. So then it like that moved into daytime hours where I would like come home from work and like make dinner and sit down and watch, like actively watch it without anything else on. So that, like, again, but like if it's an episode I'd seen 100 times, like the one where Niles throws a dinner party and the bird gets stuck on his head, like I don't need to actually pay attention to that episode because I've seen it probably 50 times in my life.
Oh my god, yeah. It's interesting. It's, anyway, yeah, I think that, you know, going back to the musicals, it is definitely something where, you know, it is intended to capture you in the way that, you know, Ariana's made her little home cinema, so...
It's not because I'm, like, better. It's because I literally cannot do more than one thing at a time.
I agree. I mean, I agree, because some people, like I've said, like, some people listen to audiobooks, I've said this so many times, like, while they're, like, writing. Like, I gotta listen to music and write, like, because I'm, like, there's...
So you start listening to the words.
Some information there, and then I can't do that, like, my brain can only input one thing. Like, I can't, you know, I could listen to an audiobook or podcast while I'm maybe, like, folding laundry or something, maybe, but generally even that is like, if my brain is like a VCR and it's actively recording the input of like whatever it is, music or an audiobook or TV, if it's actively inputting, then yeah, I'm not really able to do anything else. Whereas if it's not actively inputting, then it's on, but I'm not really taking it in. So, I don't know. Like, I do agree with that, but, I don't know. I you know, I like the communal experience of live tweeting, like, a thing that is on the screen. Like, I do enjoy, like, for the things that I am actually, like, kind of, you know, group watching, the experience of live tweeting or in a group chat, like, watching things with people and, like, commentating. So I like the live experience that kind of communal event creates in terms of communication. It's not necessarily my favorite thing for everything that I watch, but for some things I like it. But, like, you know, like awards shows, for example, is a good example.
Well, you don't really need to watch that. You've already seen the dresses on the red carpet. So.
Also, awards shows, I would say, is one where you can do something else, because does anyone really care? Yeah. Like, you're just waiting to find out.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, Supernatural, you know, sometimes I'll, like, follow people's, you know, live tweet, like, you know, the creators and whatever. But the live musical seems like something that can be a cool communal experience for people that do like to live tweet and communicate while something's happening. But to me, that still doesn't necessarily equal that the event had to have been performed live, like, as long as everyone's watching it on screen at the same time. But, you know, maybe that live event, like Ariana described, is important for some people. But I'd really love to see how someone could pull it off. You know, say they did in the Heights and, you know, it was under Lin-Manuel's jurisdiction and he was calling all the shots for exactly how it was going to work and he had the best team available to him, you know, and the most supportive crew. I'd be interested to see how, like, the best of the best could turn out in this kind of live musical situation. And, yeah, there's certainly been some awkward ones, but I don't know. It's, the Rent situation is a little bit unfortunate, but I always thought it was a terrible choice to make a live, fun live family of people, you know? So, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't even want to ask if you want to talk about Smallville. I feel like you're going to say, no, I want to do something else first. So
I'm sorry. Have I been too difficult for you, Brittany? I am sorry.
I just want you to, I want to hear your thoughts about Smallville, but I don't think I ever will.
I finally have a good lead-in because Brittany talked about watching.
Oh, so my other three lead-ins weren't good.
No. Okay. I told you I had to get into the mentality of it. I was prepared to talk about one, so I had to flip my brain. Brittany, I just told you that I have a hard time managing my brain. So you were talking about how Frasier started off as like your go-to-sleep show. I also like to go to sleep watching TV shows, but I also have to pay attention to TV shows, so it's really difficult. So I have a hard time going to sleep. but one of my go-tos now is Smallville. Smallville, when I was in high school, was my absolute favorite show, and it probably, like, saved my life multiple times because, like, high school is not a very fun time for, like, I actually had a great time in high school. Like, I didn't get bullied or anything, and I was, like, very smart and cool, so.
but it sucks.
But it still sucked. So you've got all these hormones, and you're like, oh, who am I? Like, what am I going to do? And for me, Smallville was like, it was my favorite time of the whole week was Thursday nights at 8:00. And sometimes I actually still think back to that time and I'm like, how did I make it? Because we had one TV in the house and it was like in the living room / kitchen. And there was so many people running around and like yelling and like so many little kids. And I used to have to get in fights all the time because I wanted to watch my show at 8 and I would like throw little fits and cry if somebody else was going to watch. My dad wanted to watch like Dateline or something. So, and now we can just record everything. Isn't that great? Or you can watch it illegally later. So wonderful.
Interestingly, you guys say that about like pausing the live TV and coming back to it. Again, maybe some people who have cable in Australia can do this, but this is a technology we don't have.
Oh, I couldn't do it until a month ago when I got my first ever DVR. Like, I've never had it before in my life.
I don't think we have DVR in Australia, or at least if we do, I don't know how to use it. So it's certainly not a standard part of life.
Yeah. I also do not have DVR. What I mean is when I'm watching something illegally on watchseries.eu, I can pause it.
Oh my God, does that site still work? I haven't been on that in so long.
That's true. Whoops. I suppose, yes, we can certainly get our content online and control our access to it on the computer. That's totally fair.
And honestly, guys, I probably won't have DVR in at the end of 12 months when they're like, oh, it's not free anymore. And I'll be like, well, it was nice knowing you.
Yeah. Cable is so expensive, and I feel like they're just shooting themselves in the foot because you don't need it anymore if you're just willing to be patient and wait for it the next day or download it illegally. So anyway... Don't download things illegally, you guys. Just like you shouldn't support Logan Eccles. But what was I saying? Smallville is really good. And you guys have never seen it, so we can't talk about it. But it's one of those weird shows where, like, it's not very good, but it makes me feel good. Mm-hmm. So I like watching it because it makes me feel good. But I realize that it's objectively not good. Like, we could never do it on Rewatchable because new people would be like, this is so bad. How am I getting through this?
Like, you don't think it holds up? It doesn't hold
I think up. That the problem is, first of all, that it's 22 episodes and 10 seasons. So it's way too long.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that long.
Many episodes. And the thing is, it has every episode, I will say, has moments that are gems. And I do feel like the character development is so lovely and beautiful. But it doesn't... Mm-hmm. I just don't feel like it's up to the par of what we expect from TV today in terms of, like, it is very monster of the week. And
yeah,
like the first three seasons until Lois Lane comes on, they literally do not have any comedic relief whatsoever. Like, the show takes itself so seriously. I don't even like really watching the first three seasons because until Lois Lane comes, it's really just a bunch of people taking themselves way too seriously. But there are some just really lovely things about the show. Like, the Kents in general as a family are so wholesome and pure. And the parents are very unique, I feel like, in terms of the kids really respect them and you really respect them as a viewer. And that comes from them always taking the kids seriously. Like, they're parents, and you can tell that they have their own lives and their own problems, but it's not like Riverdale where they're like, you know, because they're having an affair with the sheriff or something. It's they're just like nice, wholesome people who are trying to run their farm and keep their child from getting shipped off to be a government experiment.
Yeah.
And just like their problems are that they're trying to raise this person who could become, like, either the worst, like, he has the power to become literally, like, the worst person on the planet to take over the world. And they're just trying to both keep him safe from other people, but also, like, keep him safe from himself and keep him grounded and a good person. And that's, they're so, such lovely, wholesome parents. And Clark is, he's just so lovely. And I love him because he's, in terms of heroes go, and I feel like this is probably like why so many people love Captain America now. He's just so, like, he's just a pure hearted person, and he has the power to do so much bad things. He could literally do anything in the world. And what he does with his powers is like help his parents fix their broken barn and things like that. You know, like his, like, he has x-ray vision, but you know, he would never use it.
I mean, I think it sounds nice, and it's very interesting, Smallville, like, because it, like, it was one of those ones that crossed over from the WB to CW, right? Like, did you watch it all? And did you end up watching it all the way to the finale, like, of 10 seasons?
I actually still have not watched the finale because it's one of... I feel like we've talked about this before. There's where you don't want to watch the finale because then it's over. Like, I haven't seen the Downton finale either.
Oh, my God, really? Yes. What about when the movie comes out?
I know, then I'm going to have to watch it.
And then you just not watch
the movie. Yeah, and then she'll never see the movie.
And it's interesting because Tom Welling as Clark. Yeah, because as you probably know, like Jensen Ackles was second in line.
Yeah. He was on the show for a little bit.
And he was on the show in season 4, and then he was meant to carry on, but then got Supernatural. I cannot imagine Jensen Ackles in 10 seasons of that kind of, like, Superman character. Like,
it would be a very different show.
I can't even envision. I mean, and he can play, like, that super sweet, pure thing. We see that, like, you know, he can do that very nicely. Like, it's, you know, we see that occasionally in Supernatural, in like especially in moments where Dean has some sort of like memory loss where he doesn't remember all of the baggage he has and his inner self is like very sweet. But it's interesting because I don't think that show would have survived like with him as Clark.
Yeah.
I just don't think that he would have been right for it at all.
He definitely has.
He's in his wheelhouse. He's not as wholesome, like he's a bit more,
he has more of an edge and like a charisma that I think Clark does not
have. He's got a bit too much, and again, like Dean is cocky as a defense mechanism. He's kind of bumbling in reality, but like Jensen certainly has a sharp edge to him, and I feel like it's just interesting that he's been on a show that has been run for, you know, he found his niche and that show's run forever, and then this show ran for so long, you know.
It's also nice.
If it had been in the opposite way around, if Jensen had got Clark, neither Smallville or Supernatural would have succeeded.
Yeah.
So it's just interesting, yeah.
It's also nice, like, because I've been listening to the commentaries recently, which is why I am so into it. It's nice to see how seriously these people take these comic book characters, like that, how much they like the writers, they were so focused on like the Kents and keeping them a family and really developing the relationship between Clark and Lex Luthor, and how they felt like Clark Kent and Lex Luthor were like the backbone, their relationship was the backbone, and taking things like silly things that we think of as like, oh, silly comic book, but like taking that seriously so that you feel it. And like Tom Welling, who's like this incredibly handsome and like jaw-dropping kind of guy, taking so seriously Clark's, like, I almost want to say just like genuine goodness, and feeling that that was really important to carry through, like even in something like for them, Lois is there from season 4. And they were just doing a commentary on season 9, and they were saying it's like the end of season 9, and he's still saying, no, I don't think he's attracted to Lois yet, because he's still not over his girlfriend from, like, that he's loved since season 1. And he's, like, you know, advocating, like, if he was, then he wouldn't be the person that we love. He has to, like, fully get over one thing before he can move on to the next. And things like that. And also just, like, their Lois Lane, I strongly feel like is the best. Lois Lane is my favorite comic book character, and I would say favorite superhero, because she is the best. And their interpretation of her, I think, is the best one that's ever been done on television or the movies in general, because they make her smart and funny. So she has that like comic book edge where she gets to be fun, more funny than neurotic, and more sharp than a sharp little army brat, than how some other people have played her as more neurotic.
Well, it's interesting because does Clark within the series of Smallville ever become Superman? Like, is he known as Superman? Is he going around Supermaning? Like,
no.
Or is it? Yeah. And that's so interesting to me, because I feel like that's exactly what I want from superhero shows and movies. You know, like, I've spoken so many times about, like, because I have this personal investment in many characters where I'm like, I want the home life. Like, I don't want an action show. I mean, yes, it's an action show with, like, Monsters of the Week and stuff, but I don't want, like, the story of them being Captain America. I want the, like, home kitchen sink drama of, like, what the experience is like as a human being in this circumstance. And that sounds like exactly what Smallville is. And I feel like that none of the current superhero shows are doing that with their characters. They're still the hero. It's not just their home life, you know? Like, it is also their home life, but it's not a primary focus on all of the things that surround the human being. Like, it's, you know, it's not a show called Superman, you know? It's a show about Clark Kent. And, you know, Supergirl or, you know, The Flash might be... The Flash is still a show about Barry Allen, but he's still The Flash. And mm-hmm. The Flash is a public figure and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So this is actually kind of exactly what I want.
You might really from superhero shows. Like it, Natalie, because it's definitely... It's 10 seasons of foreplay. Like, it's 10 seasons of this is how he becomes Superman. And it's the focus is on how have his parents influenced him. How has having two very different fathers in his life influenced him, his relationship with Lex, how does that push him? And later on, his relationship with Lois.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because what you mentioned about, like, you know, it's funny that they're taking it all so seriously, like, you know, these comic book characters, but I'm like, yeah, the comic books are an interesting situation because they started, like, you know, when someone started writing superhero, you know, Superman on the page or, you know, Spider-Man on the page, there was not probably that much thought put into it. It was like a different level of entertainment, different engagement. Like, you know, that kind of level of character drama was not considered in the initial conception. But as we develop in terms of the way that we consume media, we're like, you can't just say that a thing is and just expect people to go with it. Like, we want this pulled apart into, like, if this character is a character, then he's a person who exists, and all of these things had to happen to get him to this point, you know. And now that that has become important to people, it's something that the superhero genre, which deals with all of these characters that were initially created in a very superficial way, you know, we get to deconstruct, you know, retroactively create their history that led them to being a realistic character now. Like, we want characters, even if they're superheroes, to be realistic now. And so all of that foreplay, like you said, is something that exists for, you know, Tony Stark and Steve Rogers and, you know, Batfleck and, you know, all of these people. Like, conceptually, they're writing a movie where they're hopefully having character drama that is the real influence of a person who has a whole life's worth of experience that got them to that point, rather than like, oh, I've drawn a picture of a man who's a bat. Let's make me cry. You know, like,
I feel like that's like, Gotham, like the show Gotham.
Okay, I will say though, I feel like Gotham has done a really good job with little baby Bruce.
Bruce.
So that's the only Gotham thing I like about Gotham.
Is my dad's favorite show that's on TV. And he's in mourning right now, in denial that it's ending. But I keep asking him, it's like my favorite question to ask him. I'm like, is he Batman yet? And his answer every single time is, he's always been the Batman. Oh, and I love it. Like, he's absolutely right. Like, he is, like, what's happening to him right now is why he is the Batman. So, like, on one level, yes, Dad, he is the Batman. But, you know, like, I just keep asking, like, well, does he have... And he's like, but to answer your question, no, he does not have the suit yet. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, it is super interesting to me. And I was, you know, I conceptually knew that that's what Smallville was, Ariana. But I really didn't think about how it was fulfilling exactly the way that I want the superhero genre to play with form, if you know what I mean. Like, I've said so many times, like, superhero genre now is just, you know, it's not, it doesn't define the structure, it's just a subject matter. And within that exists every possible trope about humanity that just happens to be dealing with, like, the issues of a power, you know? And I wasn't really thinking about the fact that Smallville did this for 10 seasons when no one else really has tried to do that with the current superhero surge. Like, the low-key development. And so I am quite keen But yeah, it's cute. Like, what made you get back into it now, or is it just you're always constantly thinking about Smallville in the back of your mind?
I am always constantly thinking about Smallville. Superman is my favorite. When you come to my apartment, Natalie, you can see all the Superman stuff in my room.
Oh, that's so good.
But so I am always thinking about it, but it's because it came out on Hulu, and I was like, wait, I can watch this just like streaming? This is great. I don't have to like go do some illegal watchseries.eu stuff. So so I started watching it, and it's also just so nice, like when I'm feeling, I think I really got into it when I ended my last job and was feeling very stressed out all of the time, 24/7. It was a really good like calmer.
Honestly, that's why I really fell hard into Frasier. It was like Christmas was coming. I was stressed. I had a lot of work to do at like work and just like extra stuff and like shopping needed to be done. And like, but when I would come home, like my tree was up and the lights were like the perfect level. And I was like, I just want to watch something familiar. And I like ignored the Netflix queue. And like, I had really overdone the Hallmark movies at that point. And I was like, I can't do it anymore. I need something like very familiar, even though Hallmark movies like are all the same. So that's when I started like moving Frasier into the daytime, because I'm like, you know what? I don't have to wait till I'm going to bed, because I realized I started going to bed at like 7:45.
So you can watch Frasier.
I wanted to watch Frasier, and I'm like, you can watch this in your living room. You don't have to put yourself to bed before 8 p.m. to watch Frasier. Mm. So, yeah, it's a nice, like, to have a show that you've seen and just have this, like, familiar, like relationship with. And then also watching it at, like, different stages, like, you start to notice different things.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Like, there were plot lines like that I like didn't care for the first time around, and I'm like, oh, actually this makes a lot more sense, and I like this person coming back. And yeah, it's I like rewatching things.
Yeah, I will say that as a teenager I really hated Lana Lang, like with a fiery passion. I thought she was awful and so boring. And now I'm like, oh, she's just like a poor sweet sad girl. She's still boring, but like she's just, I shouldn't hate her just because she's not the girl that I like, I want him to end up with.
Interesting. I'm just scrolling through Smallville, and it seems like some of the initial developers of it, like the were a lot of the same people that originally developed Supernatural, like David Nutter, who's a massive casting director and producer. Like, he's actually now involved with Game of Thrones. He directed both the pilot of Smallville and Supernatural, and he was the one that brought Jensen Ackles in for Supernatural and stuff like that. And like Phil Segrisha, who's a executive producer on Supernatural, who I love, was involved in the first season of Smallville. So it's clearly like an expansion of that whole television world and family and that WB-CW merger situation. And yeah, I don't know. I'm keen. Like, I'm curious, like, if you don't think it holds up, like, what parts of it don't hold up?
I think it's too long. I think 22 episodes is too many episodes for this kind of show. I think it just develops too slowly for now. Like, it's fine for me because I know it's coming and I can, like, skip things if I think it's, like, a boring monster. For me, I think it develops a little too slowly, but then maybe that's part of its charm. Maybe that's why I like it, because it feels so well developed because it's so slow.
How many people come to the town of Smallville to attack Clark? Like, how many monsters of the week are there?
This is their genius thing, and the way they're able to get away with everything is that, so Clark comes in a meteor shower, and the meteor shower left all of this kryptonite around. And so everyone, like, anyone that was alive during that time of the meteor shower. So really, like, most of that town is meteor freaks. Like, most of that town is people who have powers that are...
Wow.
And they all decide to be bad with them, basically. So every week it's a new teenager who's like, now I'm going to try and kill a cheerleader. So...
Okay. Interesting. Huh. That's quite clever.
Yeah. So yeah, really, cool. Clark doesn't even know that he's an alien for, or not an alien, but like he doesn't know that he's from Krypton for
really?
Like several seasons.
So he just thinks he's a meteor.
Yeah.
He's like, we had this thing happen and I'm one of the affected people. Interesting. That's so cool.
It's cute. I literally knew nothing about Smallville, so I'm actually kind of glad that I now know what it is. Like, I knew it had to do with Superman, but beyond that, nothing.
Interesting. I'm that's cool. I am definitely interested. And I'm keen to potentially pursue Smallville when I get time to watch 10 episodes of a show.
Well, if you ever decide to start, Natalie, I'm here for you.
Thank you. You can show me all your Superman things when I come to your house.
And then, you know, if you're bored and want to watch 11 seasons of Frasier, you'd let me know.
I can do that too. I equally like both of those options.
All right. Are we
satisfied? I think that we're done with our hypes and gripes there. Fairly intensive.
We've now recorded for 3 hours.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. I'm sorry that I was so difficult and made Brittany's hosting duties so horrible.
Well, now we get to the easy part of my hosting duties because I took a walk at work yesterday to go get some water and had an epiphany for two truths and a lie. So that's the only reason why I'm hosting.
I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the theme for this episode's two truths and a lie is superstition. So.
Okay.
All right. Number one, superstition is my favorite Stevie Wonder song. Number two, I will not step on a shadow that makes an X shape. Number three, on 11/11 for 10 years straight, I wished for the same thing. And when it came true, I've never wished again.
Okay, I think the two superstitions are true. And the reason why is because you were walking. And so that leads me to believe that you did not step on that shadow X while you were walking, and that's what made you think of the third thing that is really cool. Because I love Stevie Wonder, but I just feel like I want the other two things to be true more than I want the first one to be true.
I am curious. I'm now curious as to, like, if that third one is true, like, what the thing is.
Yeah.
And you know, like, and if you wished it for 10 years straight, it was probably just a matter of time. Like, was it really a wish coming true, or was it, like, you just powered through and made that thing happen? You know, like, I was, I don't know, like, meeting Eric McCormack, I bet. I'll go with Ariana's decision. I'm happy to do that.
Okay, yes, Higher Ground is my favorite Stevie Wonder song. So, the 11/11 wish, Natalie, you nailed right on the head. That was the
wish. Shut up. Is it really?
Yes. Yeah. Every birthday cake, every 11/11.
I'm such a good friend.
It was, and like for some reason, something like switched in my head the morning that I met him at the Today Show where I was like, well, I never have to wish for anything again. So. I have never.
But you realize that you made that happen.
It doesn't
matter.
You put
yourself in that scenario.
It doesn't matter.
It wasn't like fate. It was your own power.
It was.
You are your own fate.
That he turned and saw that I was still there when he left. But anyway,
I don't think I've ever heard your story of how you met him.
Oh, you didn't hear my, like, I stood outside the Today Show for 3.5 hours waiting. All right, I'll tell it really quick. So, Will and Grace, just Deborah Messing and Eric McCormack, were going to be on the Today Show for the 15th anniversary of the premiere. So this is like before the revival, all of that nonsense.
And, what year was this?
2013.
Okay.
So they were going to be on the, just the two of them on the Today Show. And I thought it was just going to be like the morning segment. So I got up at like, you know, the ass crack of dawn, got into Manhattan. I made a poster. I wore a Will and Grace shirt. It was all very sad and tragic.
And I stood there and I was like up to like the front of the barricade, whatever. And they filmed their segment and it was nowhere near where I was standing. And it was like really, like, all right, whatever. They came outside, did like, you know, the little promo thing, like before they like cut back to like being in the studio, like, oh my God, we're with the fans. But like, not really. They just stood there for like 5 seconds and filmed something and then went back inside. So they finished up like the 7 to 8 o'clock hour, whatever that was. Then they were going to be on with Kathy and Hoda. And I was like, oh my God, that's at like 10. So I just hung, I went and got a cup of coffee and then I came back around because they like take down the barricade at that point for like the big Today Show stuff in Rockefeller Center. And they just have a smaller one that's up against the glass, like behind Kathy and Hoda. Mm-hmm. And now I think Kathy and Hoda, like, well, just Hoda. I don't, Kathy Lee's leaving, but like, they film like up on a higher level. I think, I don't think they're on the ground floor anymore, but at this point they were still on the ground floor. And so you can like stand at the window and I got a spot back there. There were only like 10 people left cause it's not a big spot. And it's just standing there, had my sign and like, you know, waiting. They film their thing. And then like, there's a moment where, and I have the picture, Eric McCormick comes up to the glass and stands with his back turned and like holds his hand out like he, and Deborah Messing takes his picture. And I was like, I don't know, I'm just going to hold up the sign for that picture. I don't even know if that picture exists anywhere. It's on Deb's phone. And when I meet her, I'm going to ask her about it. So then the day is over. They're leaving to go to like whatever show they were on next for their like promo, whatever. So I'm walking out of Rockefeller Center and there's like a big glass wall, like to see like the inside like, lobby area. And I'm just walking like defeated with my poster back to Penn Station. And I was like walking kind of slow and I turned and I looked in through the glass and he was standing there on his cell phone, like with his publicist or whatever. And he looks at me and he goes up to the window and he goes, holds up his hand. He's like, 1 minute, 1 minute. And he goes to a door and the door was locked. And he's just like, I'll find a way out through the window.
Oh, how cute.
To you.
Oh, that's really cute.
And he like came out and through like the revolving doors and it was me and him in Rockefeller Center. And we got a stranger on the street to take our photo.
Oh my gosh.
So that was
that is the sweetest thing I've ever heard.
That was how I met
him. What a lovely man.
Yes. And then so the shadow thing, just really quick. I watched something, I think when I was like 8 or 9, it was one of those like creepy murder shows, like true murders, like of things that happened, blah, 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 something with a castle. All I remember is that the creepy narrator was talking about this woman who got murdered in a castle and she died on where the lights cross and make an X in the hallway. I have never stepped on one since that like television show. Like, and Natalie, you went to the office in Manhattan. Those like automatic doors that open.
Oh, your old internship. Yeah.
They have like these automatic, like you're going into like a grocery store or any store, like the two sliding glass doors. The way the lights were positioned in that building was when they would open and a shadow X would come like closer to you. So I'd have to like time my step over it every single day I left that building. So yeah, my mom used to make fun of me because we used to have this hallway in one of the houses that we lived where if like my light was on, my brother's light was on and their light was on, it was like Brittany's not getting to her room because she's got to strategically jump over everything, get into her bedroom.
Oh my God.
And it's like weird. My mom will still watch me. Like if I'm walking around like someone's house or like even our own house, like if I'm walking around, she will watch because she thinks it's hilarious. It's,
what, that you leap over?
I will purposely step out of the way if there is, like, an X on the ground. Really weird. But anyway, those are my superstitions. Well, one's, like, ridiculous, but...
What did your sign say?
Oh, my sign? It said... It's in my profile picture on Facebook if you want to check it out.
I've seen it so many times, but yeah. Now I'm like, what did this sign say that made him be like, I have to, no matter what, find a way to so get
it's like
her.
A collage of pictures from the show, and then it says, thanks for 15 years of laughs.
That's kind. Oh, and you're by yourself?
By myself. Because, again, no one will do these things with me.
I would have done it with you, but that's cute. I love that because... Oh, you why? I love this. Because... You're very chill, except that I know that you're not very chill, so I don't feel too embarrassed. I feel like you play very chill, but I know that, like, my extreme weirdnesses, like, you know, waiting after shows or, like, whatever it is, like, I never feel, like, uncomfortable with my, like, fan expression because I know that you're, like, secretly very...
That is... Yes, that's true.
But yeah, it's all good. It's hilarious, and I can't believe that I like nailed that so hard on the head that I felt like that has to be it. Like I just felt like that.
I mean, that's the pinnacle of what I would wish for. Like when I was like a sad 14-year-old sitting in my room watching Will and Grace reruns while all my friends were out having fun. Like I was like, I'm gonna meet him one day.
One day I'd really like to talk to you deeply about your relationship with Will and why, what it is, like what the connection is, why you're so obsessed with him, you know.
I would like to too, because it's so,
but
it's so specific.
Yeah.
It is very
and it's
specific,
fine. Like,
and
know,
I can... Actually, this is a conversation for another day, but I'll leave you with a little teaser. I know the moment where I was sitting, what episode I was watching, what channel I was watching it on, where something clicked, where I was like, I have to watch every single episode of this show and never miss it ever again.
Like, is it, okay, is it that you adore him in like a, you're in love with him way, or like in not heterosexual love? Or is it like you relate to, like, he's like your ID character, like you relate to him? Or is it like a combination of those,
well,
or neither of those?
I think it's, I feel like it's more of a relating to of the character, but appreciating the actor who brought the character, you know? And then, like, just watching for things elsewhere, and he's just, like, a genuinely, like, good person. But, you know, just, like... I feel like it, I don't know what happened. The reason that I really became infatuated with him was because he had this friend. Like it was, that was what drew me to the show was like, oh, there's this like friendship here that I'm obsessed with. And then I think over time watching the show as much and as deeply as I did, it was more like, I am the Will of this relationship type of deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause Eric, I get, like, I understand completely and utterly being obsessed with the person who created this character that you loved, whether that is in a, you love him because you relate to him, or you love him because you want to be friends with him, or whatever. But, I'm curious about the character, what you feel about Will, like, what it is, but it's another day. Like, Eric, I understand being obsessed with the actor of someone that you're that closely connected to is fiction. I'm curious about what your relationship with Will is, but that's so a different story.
Next time.
Yeah. Maybe we can do an episode all about our weird ID characters where...
Oh, that would be so fun.
Actually, that would be kind of fun. I would definitely have to do some work, though. Like, I would want to, like, map it out.
The best and worst things that we feel about, like... Because, you know, I've said many times on Twitter, and I wrote this massive article about it, that, like, the reason that Schitt's Creek has, like, flown to the top of my top five list of shows is because I have never seen a character like David Rose in the specific ways that I have problems relating to the world. Like, it's so close in such a painful way, therefore I love it. But... Yeah, I'm curious. It's a very interesting thing to think about. So that's a story
that's
for another day.
Great.
But
and also, I have to be on that one, so I demand to be.
Yeah, for sure. We've got a question of the day here, which I have just pulled. I didn't get the handle, but I'll find it later. Anyway, do you want to read this sure. question here?
So the question of the day is, what is the stupidest, weirdest, most random, most unexpected app currently on your phone?
All of those? Do they have to be stupid and unexpected?
No, I think you can choose your favorite of the okay. options.
Okay. I'm going to go get my phone, so...
I have a very, very old phone, which is also why I don't play on it while I'm watching TV.
I don't have a lot of apps.
I still have MoviePass. Is that weird?
Hold on a sec.
I have Bumble on my phone, even though I don't use it.
I have to go, like, what?
I have a tuner on my phone because I play the violin. Sound corset like tuner and metronome.
I have an Android phone. I actually have a thing where I'm like, I have like a one in, one out system with apps where I like don't want like more than 2 pages full or whatever, or like an even amount of pages, or like the letters, like, you know, the apps being listed, like, you know, A to, like right now I can see that I had to download Airbnb for my trip. Therefore, like, it ends in a weird place, like the alphabetical. Like, I've got, like, ones, because that's in A, I've got ones from the letter I, like, InkPad, InShot, Instagram, that cross 2 pages, so I have to take something out from that page so all the letters are on the same page. But the weirdest ones maybe are, I have 3 different colouring apps, like, digital, like, you know, like, colouring in, like, either colour by number or just, like, whatever, which I find very meditative. I have, I just got Bitmoji, which is probably going to make people go insane at me. My friend Cass came to stay and she uses Bitmojis in a way that's really obnoxious. And then I decided that I wanted to see how well I could make myself on Bitmoji. And so now I'm highly amused by that.
I saw it. It's very cute. I recommend it's people ridiculous. Go check it out.
It's ridiculous.
The judging one felt like I was having a conversation with you. I was like, oh, okay.
Everyone should make themselves on Bitmoji. And I have a few weird ones. Like, I have a countdown, like, it's called Time Until, where you just, like, put in things, you know, like, oh, you know, Supernatural premiere, or, like, you know, flying to New York or whatever. And it is a countdown app, which is kind of fun, but I don't use it that much. I have a sleepy time calculator, so it's like a sleep cycle, like if you're going to sleep, if it's 11:45, like what is the alarm time that would be like the right actual circadian sleep cycle? I don't know. Oh, and I have the New York subway map on my phone because I was checking Airbnb locations. Leo has the New York subway map on her phone 365 days a year, not in the moments that we're going to New York. So yeah, she has way weirder ones, so like games and stuff. Brittany, I missed what yours were. Did you
I
say
didn't.
Them yet?
The weirdest, most random one that I have on my phone is, I think, Webtoons, because I went to Comic-Con and I picked up a print by an artist, and her name is Katie Cook, and she does she had like postcards on her table. And I was like, oh, I wonder, like, what this is. And so I just took the postcard and put it in my bag. And then later, she does, like, a web comic called Nothing Special. And I was like, oh, I guess I'll check it out. And then when I was, like, flying, I flew out of the country a couple times towards the end of last year for work. And so I was like, oh, I'll download, like, her webtoon and, like read it on airplane mode on my phone as I'm flying, and it was so good. And so now I'm subscribed to like a bunch of like web comics that I'll read like kind of like, you know, at lunch at work or something, because they kind of update like weekly and stuff. But it's interesting because I like looking at them on like Instagram, and so this just like transfers them into like a more cohesive like storytelling thing for like longer form stories. So I guess that one would be, if you picked up my phone, you'd be like, what the heck is this? Other than that, I have like a Walgreens app that I've never opened, I don't think ever. And a bunch of stuff that like
controls my TV, like my Xfinity app and my Google Home app. And the rest of them are just practical, but I don't like having apps on my phone. It's not even like a alphabetical type thing. Like, first of all, they all have to be in the same spot. If one moves, like, I can't open anything. But yeah, I just have like the basic Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, work mail, Gmail, WhatsApp.
Yeah. I mean, I've got plenty of random apps that are kind of specific, like to stuff. Like I've got a call recorder, like I've got a thing that records calls for doing like phoners, and I've got a time zone converter and, you know, all of that kind of stuff for, you know, all of that. Oh, I have a meditation app, Headspace. That's kind of cool, I guess. But I don't know. Some people have some wild apps, let me tell you. Sometimes I open the app store and it suggests things that are just very strange that I never would have considered that there was an app for. But
yeah, and I also like recently had to upgrade my phone because my older iPhone like crapped out on me. And so I'm not used to having storage on my phone. And so I'm used to like having like the very bare minimum, like download it to use what you need to use it for and then immediately get rid of it because your phone's going to keep popping up saying your storage is full. But now I don't have that problem and I'm still like, well, I'm not using this, might as well get rid of it.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm very, very... I got a phone last year, Samsung 9 or whatever. I don't know. Samsung 9, I think. And its storage is just bigger than I expected. And so I certainly have that issue. But yeah.
Before we leave, could we give a quick shout out to this girl, Leah? Is she like somebody's... do you know her, Natalie?
No, I think I know her from my Twitter. Yeah, okay. She is...
I recognize her from Rewatchables Twitter.
Yeah.
But I don't know her personally. So, but her tweet is so cute and precious. And I just want to give her a shout out. And also, it's so lovely because I always think, like, who's going to listen to this? Like, our nonsense. Like, who wants to sit through 3 hours of us complaining or whatever? I know that's how I feel. I'm like, I'm not important. But, I always think of, like, the loneliest times in my life, podcasts were really important to me, and so just to think that, like, we could be someone's friend in their ear is so lovely. So, I'm really grateful for her, and anybody listening.
I've posted the tweet, and I will share it again when the episode comes up, but it is a hilarious, cute... slash accurate meme, and Brittany has used my favorite meme for this. Which is sometimes I love internet humor so much, but anyway, it is so cute, and yeah, it's nice. We're here to be a friend if anyone wants to be friends with us, because honestly, I need them, so that's fine. Anyway, yeah, it's all good. It's all good. Very sweet. So thank you for being my podcast friends, you guys. You're the only people I've talked to with my real... No, that's actually not true. I did have a friend just come to stay for a few days, but that's very rare. You'll definitely be the only people that I talk to with my real human voice for pleasure, besides from Leo, in the next week. I'm 100% sure of that, so that's sad and pathetic, but I will see you soon in the real world.
In the real world, live and in person.
Yeah, and do Not About the Weather live and see if it is pulled off as well as Rent. Well, so, yeah.
It's always funny when I'm like, oh, my friends from Australia are coming, and everyone's like, what? You have friends in Australia? Like, when did they move there? I'm like, no, that's just where they are. Like, it's not, like...
Is that unusual? It's not,
like, people I met in New Jersey and then left for Australia. Like, nope.
Though, I did meet that one girl who did move to Australia from New Jersey.
Oh, yeah, the girl I went to grammar school with, who just randomly lives in Australia now.
So strange. But, yeah, that was one of the weirder experiences. Oh... Anyway, we should probably go. I'm so sorry. This has gone a bit wild and uncontrollable because I'm clinging to every moment of social interaction. So pathetic. It's fine. All good. It's all good. Everything is great. I'm not sad. It's fine. I'm very... taking a turn. Okay. Brittany, take this away from me.
I didn't write a haiku.
Oh, no. Wait, let's see if we can do one right now. Goodbye, everyone. This show is over now. Bye. We are here for you.
Yay! That's quite cute, actually. Thank you. Anyway, thank you guys for hanging out with me. I'm very excited to see you soon. It'll be fun and lovely. And we can do things. We will figure it out, and I will see you both soon. And it'll Bye. Be a magical wintry adventure.
So magical. Right. Okay.
It'll definitely be a winter adventure here.
Here it's lovely, so.
I'm excited for that.
It is currently 5 degrees outside.
Oh, my God.
Well, let's refresh. No, I'm sorry. I stand corrected. It is 6 degrees.
Oh, my goodness.
What? Hang on. 6 degrees F or C?
Oh, Fahrenheit.
Oh.
It's going down to 3, so it'll be fine. Not as cold as Chicago.
I don't think I can handle that.
What is it in Chicago? Didn't they say it's, like, colder than Australia? Not Australia. Antarctica.
It was when my friend, not Danielle, but my other friend, Alex, he posted a picture of him going outside. And it was, he posted a screenshot from his phone. It said negative 22. And then he posted a picture of his beard, and it was complete icicles.
Oh, my God.
It's just, like... I don't know. And fucking Trump being like, lol, 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 where's global warming now? I want to die. It's so bad. Anyway, I don't know how I'm going to survive if it doesn't improve.
No, it will. This is like an Arctic vortex. It's going to be back up into the 20s and 30s.
That's a casual term. Arctic vortex.
No, but then, like, Natalie, the rest of this week, like, it's going to slowly creep back up, but then it's, like, 40, 48, 53. Oh, and then Tuesday, almost 60, so don't worry about it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's going to be 58 on Tuesday, and then back down to 35 by next Friday. So, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? It might be 85, it might be a blizzard. I don't know. We'll see.
I am concerned. I don't know how to pack. Okay, anyway... Laters. It'll be okay. Everything is fine. The weather will kill us all. So.
That's probably the truest thing anyone has said today.
Yeah, cool. All right, have a good evening, you good friends. Be safe and happy.
Bye.
Bye.